Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
I just think they have a sexual obsession. I mean, the whole thing is, it's really disgusting when you think about all of the demonization that's happened with black men being classified as rapists. And I really doubt during those days that very few black men were raping white women. I really doubt that happened hardly at all, because they lived in a state of constant terrorism. So I doubt that black men were running around raping white women. But it's sickening to me that black men now, when you hear rapist, the image in white people's minds and in some black people's minds is a black man. But nobody has a worse record of rape than the white man all over the world. Goes to Thailand and rapes little children. Everywhere he goes. I mean, he's they had some aid worker that was raping raping children in a South African orphanage. And it's just sickening to me how they've managed to take all of their sins and crimes and faults and put them on black people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nobody more promiscuous overall, collectively, in my opinion, than the white female. I mean, but the black woman somehow who is a victim of rape has a reputation for being promiscuous.
That's quite true. You only have to look at the church itself and see what was done with the nuns and the priests. How they feel that by having sex with these non-white children, that it really was not a part of their vows. They were not breaking their vows because they looked at you as really not being human. So whatever they do to you, it really wasn't a big deal. So they went all over the globe in the non-white area and raped and did all kinds of atrocities to these children. You know,
the one thing I'd like to say to brothers, if I could just say this quickly, then I'll stop talking about somebody else's face, is, you know, there's such a thing as, I believe, in post-trauma. And when you look at the history of black women over the last 500 years, and black men as well, but I think women got the brunt of it. When you look at the history of black women and how we were consistently raped and sexually mistreated and tortured and degraded over 500 years, and we've passed that along from generation to generation, all I would say to brothers is, please get some, we got to develop some empathy for each other. Because I remember when I was a young woman, a teenager, white men making comments, white men saying things, you know, this and that. So what I'm saying is black women have been greatly traumatized, and a lot of our personality dysfunctions and issues come from this trauma, sexual abuse as children, sexual degradation in the media, just over and over again, and this sexual post-traumatic stress that's being passed from one generation of black females to the other. So I would just say that we have to develop some empathy for our sisters, not just black men, but black women toward other black women. You know, we have to develop some empathy and stop some of this anti-black femaleness, this anti-blackness that we seem to, we've been pretty much programmed to have. We got to start having some empathy, because there's a lot of pain and suffering going on. And I see it in black women every day. And I'm not saying that black men don't experience it, but I do think black women have gotten the brunt of sexual degradation and sexual abuse and sexual rape I think black women have had the brunt of it more than anybody else on this planet. And so when the media and the white man and the white woman degrade black women, black men, you got to stand up for us. You got to stand up for us. You got to protect your fields.
Here, here.
For your crops are grown, you know?
Here, here. Think,
that's all I wanted to just share.
Black brother.
Black brother of hell.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Monday, October 15th, 2018. So I have been told we will be back to the normal broadcast schedule. Should be by Saturday. I think we'll have the compensatory call-in back this weekend. We have 4 days of prenatal teacher training left. It will conclude on Friday. Wow, that is a whole program to talk about that experience down the road. Business at hand. Let me be clear. Understand me without problems. I am in Seattle, Washington. The temperature on this day, 60 degrees, sunny, not a cloud or chemtrail in the sky, crystal blue skies. We don't have many of these days left this calendar year and probably until May 2019. So I really, really would have loved to have been doing other things outside feverishly chasing white women. Studying for my prenatal yoga exam, lots of things that I could have been doing with my Monday other than reading Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, which is equal parts laughable and painful for me to reference. Again, we're reading this book, Pamela Evans Harris, longtime guest and investor, caller, contributor to the Cows, one of our favorite guest here on the program. She passed away earlier this year. We've been reading her book. For me, it's been stunning, just both remembering, rereading, and with information that I have, my understanding of racism, white supremacy that I have now, it has been a totally different read. And as I said, I saw previously, I felt that this book had a non-constructive, anti-black male tone to it. And reading it now, it is so glaring and repulsive. And that's the word that I chose specifically. It is absolutely repulsive. And as I said, let me be clear, I will be reading the remainder of this book with the same mindset that I read The Hate U Give, a book that I said, and I stick by, the worst book I've ever read. And one thing that it shares in common with this book, that book also, Black Miss Andre, venomous tone against black males, which is ironic because that also is a book where the author said explicitly that her favorite character was a black male. Anyway, quick things that I will say. The audio clip that we heard at the beginning of the program, that was from September 2011, 1 month before Jerry Sandusky, convicted child rapist, was arrested in Pennsylvania's Penn State, where he is alleged, reported to have been sexually abusing, taking advantage of black male children. Children, period. But that's something that we talked about on the program, that that was alleged that that was not being discussed. Him taking advantage of specifically targeting black boys. Anywho, that audio segment was from September 2011. The guest on that program was Danielle McGuire, suspected white supremacist, white female. We were talking about her book, At the Dark End of the Street, which details the history of white men raping black females and how that was a big motivator for the civil rights movement, black males and black females, including Robert F. Williams, saying we will not stand by and tolerate black females, black children in some cases, being raped, molested by whites. Anyway, so at the end of the program, you heard Pam call in. There were so many things that stood out that I will see if I can get in really quick. Metaphors. At the very end of that segment, she said that she wanted brothers to stand up for us. Protect your field where your crops are. That's a metaphor. I talk about that all the time on the compensatory call-in back this weekend. I don't really know what that means. And this is important because I said this last week. This comes up in the text where she makes this kind of call for black males to defend black women. And I said, some of this just comes down to, do you understand what racism, white supremacy is? Black males are not able to protect themselves. You see that every day. In my view, you cannot. It's not logical to think that black males can, quote unquote, stand up for black females. I think, or folks should have seen the latest, what they call Stand Your Ground incident in Florida, where a black male was standing up for his black female and was shot and killed on the spot. Now, folks say, hey, that's what we need more of. We've had a lot of that. And it seems that race soldiers have no problem killing any number of black people. That's a part of Mr. Fuller's code. Folks who see fit to do that, go right ahead. But it's been a lot of that. That incident just happened, you know, recently. Lots of that. So, yeah, just making sure I wanted to get that in. Let's see. Next note from the audio segment, Delectable Negro, Vincent Woodard, a book that is in Gus T's top 10 constructive read, The Delectable Negro, Human Consumption and Homoeroticism in U.S. Slave Culture, talks about how one aspect of sexual intercourse that has been not talked about and underreported is the rape and sexual exploitation and degradation of black males, colonial times to present. Next, when she said she had doubts about the numbers of black males who are running around raping white women in the 20th century or wherever in the history of white supremacy because there was a state of terrorism and they were having struggles just to survive, that is the case now. 2018 system of racism, white supremacy, state of terrorism. And I also think right now it is grossly overstated, the number of black males who are feverishly chasing and latched on to white women in that same state of terrorism and in that same state where whites can easily deny access, black people, male and females, access to whites. Specifically in that segment, Pam said that she felt there was anti-black femaleness, anti-blackness, and anti-blackness specifically focused on black females. No one called in at any point during that program after Pam said that to ask what is the constructive value of pointing out anti-black female content. That didn't have to be explained when Pam made her comment. I'm more than happy to explain why I think Black Love is a Revolutionary Act is flagrantly anti-black male and why it's significant, critical, constructive to point that out. There is a chapter in this book that we're going to cover this week on how black males are pitted against black females, ostensibly by racists. Can anyone find the chapter in the book that explains how black females are pitted against black males? Can you locate that chapter? Also, if and while you are looking, can you find a definition of love in this text? Been looking for that for a long time. Very important, since that is in the title. With that, we will get to chapter 39, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, Context of White Supremacy.
The Entertainment Blame Game. I find my mind still lingering on some of the images in most TV commercials and shows with all these black males with white and biracial females. I mean, I was literally out in public and would just see a black man walk past me and I would get disgusted. No words, the brother didn't even look my way, but I would get angry inside. TV programming is a monster. Marcia, 32, healthcare worker. Hollywood produced, promoted black films usually fall into one of two categories. 1. The good black female triumphing over the bad black male. The Color Purple, waiting to exhale. I can do bad all by myself. Four Colored Girls, Diary of a Mad Black Woman, Precious. 2. The Good Black Male Triumphing Against the Odds Without the Support of Any Good Black Females, The Blind Side, The Pursuit of Happiness, Most Denzel Washington and Samuel Jackson Movies. It appears the only black relationships that are acceptable by white Hollywood standards must portray black males and females as part or as the enemies of each other. Black males and black females are never shown in positive scenarios where they are cooperating or solving problems together, or in positive romantic sexual interactions that do not involve a black male wearing a dress or some other form of comedy or buffoonery. Interracial sex, rape, and incest scenes are the only forms of black sexuality that are tolerated in most Hollywood-produced films because these images pit the black male and female against each other and promote hostility between them both on-screen and off-screen. These images also reinforce the white perception that black sexuality is animalistic and savage. Even the vast majority of TV shows and commercials usually promote the evil, dominating, and unattractive black female and the weak, foolish black male who are either arguing, disrespecting, or opposing each other. The black male and black female blame each other and black entertainers for the degrading images of black people instead of blaming the white people in charge, WPIC, who own and control the music industry, Hollywood and TV studios, national and cable news networks, radio stations, magazines, advertisers, sponsors, FCC licenses and censors that create, script, approve, produce, sponsor, and broadcast the degrading images of black males and females all over the entire world. The Black Apologists Can't Blame Anybody Game. I truly believe there are whites who are struggling with racism, and there are a lot of white people who may not be the brightest people in the world, who don't understand how racism works, just like a lot of blacks don't understand how they have been programmed. Amiri S., Professor of Black Studies. The trademark of the Black Apologist is his or her refusal to blame white people for their racist behavior. They may insist that whites are victims of the system too, and are often found coming to the defense of a white person being accused of practicing racism. The Black Apologist can be found among all educational or income groups, may be male or female, but is more likely to be a college-educated black male professional who earns his living in a predominantly white setting. They may wear Afrocentric hairstyles and dress and change their birth names to an African name, but upon closer inspection, it is clear what they really value the most is what white people have given them. Their degrees, diplomas, awards, titles, jobs, paychecks, material possessions, and their white sexual partners. The Black Apologist usually lives in a predominantly white area, socializes with whites, and is sexually involved with whites. They are so intimate with and psychologically dependent upon whites, they are compelled to make excuses for white people even when white people are mistreating them. The Black Apologist may be well-meaning, but his or her confusion and contradictory perspectives actually promote white supremacy instead of helping to eliminate it. This explains why black apologists are in such high demand by the white people in charge. Any black person who is praised by powerful whites or white institutions should always be a red flag to the black collective that he or she is knowingly or unknowingly promoting white supremacy. The professional black apologist. The professional black apologist is a shameless agent who is paid to take the focus off white people and refocus the blame on black people. They are regular guests on so-called conservative and progressive talk shows, but are seldom allowed to host their own show on the same networks. They are often rewarded with lucrative book deals, sponsorships, and various nefarious and secretive funding for organizations that seem to exist only to promote deception and confusion around racial issues. They are usually sexually involved with or married to whites, or secretly involved with white males. They have no empathy or loyalty to their own kind and are extremely useful tools in promoting white supremacy by blaming the powerless black collective instead of rightfully blaming the white people in charge who control everything that happens in America. The political blame game, using showcase blacks as political scapegoats. The term showcase blacks, coined by Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., author of the United Independent Compensatory Code System concept, refers to the high-profile blacks that are constantly paraded before the public. They may be political dignitaries, pro athletes, entertainers, educators, business people, Supreme Court justices, and even U.S. secretaries of state. Showcase blacks are used to put a black face on unpopular government and corporate policies. Whenever a white politician or policymaker appears before cameras, showcase blacks are always standing in the background to give the impression that blacks are conspiring with corrupt white officials to deceive and defraud the public. In reality, these black bobbing heads have no power to agree or disagree with anything. Showcase blacks are also used to redirect citizens' anger from white policymakers to a black spokesperson or woman. For example, a black female is promoted to the president of a utility company shortly before gas prices are hiked. In the Jenna 6 case, six black boys were charged with felonies for a high school fight. The Louisiana District Attorney's Office assigned a black attorney to handle the case and to take the blame and absorb the wrath of the black collective to protect his white bosses from charges of racism. Pitting one showcase black against another. It is common for two showcase blacks, usually males, to appear on a network or cable news show and have a heated debate over a government or social policy that neither one has any control over. In fact, there are only four reasons any black person is given a mic and national exposure airtime. 1. To argue with another black person. 2. To degrade or ridicule another black person who may or may not be present, or black people in general. 3. To praise a white person who may or may not be present. 4. To promote white supremacy or black inferiority. Practice deception. All of the above takes the focus off the white people in charge who are actually causing whatever problem the two black powerless people are arguing about. The black people are simply pawns in the blame game by taking all of the attention off what the white people in charge are doing and putting all the focus on what the black people are saying. Showcase blacks may not understand or accept how they are being used and are ultimately blamed for something they have no control over, but their very public performances will make it appear that black, not white people, are the real problem. The ultimate blame game, showcase blacks increase white resentment. The popularity of a showcase black among the white collective does not increase acceptance of blacks in general, any more than Michael Jordan and Michael Jackson's popularity with their white fans caused a reduction of racism. In reality, showcase blacks in high-profile positions and occupations actually increase envy and resentment among whites, not acceptance, by creating the false delusion that blacks have more opportunities than whites. TV specials about black America create even more resentment because they create a false perception that blacks are getting more attention, help than whites when, in reality, neither group is getting the help they need, which is why these shows were created. Showcase blacks who have no real power are the perfect scapegoats and lightning rods for white fear, frustration, and rage. Since showcase blacks are rarely accessible to the public, this resentment and anger is often directed at everyday blacks in the form of increased racism, discrimination, and violence. Like an irate customer who is overcharged by the phone company, his only recourse is to talk or vent to a customer service rep employee who has no real power to change the corporate policy, but is paid to take the abuse and the blame for that policy. The showcase black's high-profile position is designed to redirect the rage of the increasing oppressed and impoverished white population to that showcase black or blacks, and by default to the black population, instead of blaming the white people in charge, WPIC. Scapegoating blacks sets the stage for more racism, more violence against blacks, more unemployment, more incarceration of blacks, and may eventually lead to the mass genocide of black people within America's borders. If this sounds like an unbelievable scenario, one only need to remember that a very similar scenario occurred in Germany during the 1930s. You see, if we go back to Nazi Germany and Joseph Goebbels, who understood if we keep putting out negative images of Semites and the Jewish religion, we can train the population to say, look, they're animals, they're not human, and the sooner we get rid of them, the better. Dr. Francis Kress Welsing, author of the ISIS Papers, speaking on the future of black people in America during an appearance on Tony Brown's Journal. The ultimate blame game makes the degraded black female an HIV-infected whore, welfare parasite, and monster mother, and the degraded black male an HIV-spreading, closet homosexual, rapist, criminal, buffoon, the black scapegoats for the economic crimes of the white people in charge, WPIC, who control everything that happens in America. Stop blaming black people. To all my friends, family, and associates, for the last 2 years, I have been a harsh critic of our first black president. In doing so, I have downplayed the obvious. If he is not in charge, as I have stated many times, why am I focusing so much attention and resentment in his direction instead of focusing all my attention on the white people in charge, the WPIC? With that being said, while I dislike the role all showcase blacks play in the unseemly scheme of things and the blind allegiance some black people have for a black man with a fancy title, I'm going to avoid targeting black people for ridicule and will focus 99.9995% of my attention on the real problem, the white people in charge, the WPIC. I would strongly suggest all non-white people do the same and stop fighting, fussing, cussing, arguing with, gossiping about, snitching on, degrading, mistreating, and killing other black and non-white people. All the problems, including the dysfunctional behaviors and mental illnesses of so many black people, are caused by the creators and maintainers of the white supremacy system, the white people in charge, WPIC. I sincerely apologize for my earlier confusion and for doing what I have been programmed to do all my life, blame black people for what the white people in charge are doing to black people and to all the non-white people on the planet. Telling the truth is not about hate. I do not hate anyone, including white people. I'm cordial and courteous to all people, including white people. I do not deliberately step on the toes of white people as I pass them by. I do not spit on white children as they walk to an integrated school. I have never made a white child cry by calling them an ugly name. I have never dragged a white person by the neck behind a pickup truck. I have never sodomized a white male with a plunger handle or a screwdriver while wearing a policeman's uniform. I have never shot an unarmed white person 41 or 50 times. I have never let a terrified white child sit on a roof for 4 days after a hurricane. My conscience and record are clear, but there is one thing I hate: racism, injustice, and blaming black people for what the white people in charge are doing. Chapter 40, The Balloon and the Basket. She was a beautiful mahogany brown balloon who loved soaring high in the blue skies. Attached to the balloon was a handsome, sturdy brown basket who provided stability and kept the balloon from getting too close to the sun. The strong brown tethers, cords, that held them together for the last 1,000 years had endured 1,000 terrible storms. One day, the balloon and the basket passed over a traveling circus where hundreds of shiny red, blue, green, and purple balloons floated on long, silky strings above the striped tents. The basket was awestruck. They were the most beautiful balloons he had ever seen, mainly because they weren't brown. It didn't matter that they were too small and puny to lift a basket his size. He was still impressed. The winds picked up and carried the balloon and the basket away from the circus. Heartbroken, the basket watched as the brightly colored balloons shrank in the distance. The basket blamed the balloon for being too big to steer against such a strong wind. If only he could be free of the balloon, his life would be perfect. When the balloon heard the basket grumbling below, she decided she was tired of being controlled by the basket. If only she could be free from the basket, her life would be complete. Below them, the huge, jagged white rocks and swirling waters beckoned the balloon and the basket. "Come on, take a swim," the waters coaxed the pair. "We promise we won't let you drown." The balloon and the basket paid the deceptive waters no mind. They survived more than 1,000 years together by avoiding the dangers of the jagged white rocks and raging waters. Tragically, their dependence on each other was now the main thing driving them apart. They had been a team for so long that they had took each other for granted. Secretly, each believed he or she would be better off apart, and each made plans for their escape. The next afternoon, the westerly winds blew the balloon and the basket towards the circus tents and the brightly colored balloons. This time, the basket came prepared. He took a long, sharp stick from the bottom of his basket and started poking holes in the balloon until he heard sharp hisses of air. The basket was so intent on being free, he didn't notice that the balloon was sawing away at the strong brown tethers that held them together with a saw she'd hidden away. With each poke of the basket stick, they descended another 50 feet. Now they were only 200 feet above the jagged white rocks and swirling waters. The balloon frantically sawed faster and faster. When the last tether was completely severed, the sturdy brown basket went into a free fall, tumbling over and over toward the jagged white rocks. When the basket realized his fatal mistake, he called out for the balloon to save him, but she was too busy plugging up the holes he'd made. With a loud crash and a terrifying scream, the basket hit the jagged white rocks and broke into 1,000 pieces. The swirling waters pulled up what was left of the once sturdy brown basket beneath the rolling white foam. The balloon shouted with joy. She was finally free. Without the weight of the basket and his controlling ways, she was soaring higher than ever before. Then the balloon noticed her smooth, slick surface was melting. She was too close to the sun. With a cry of dismay, she tried to descend to a safer altitude, but the torn brown tethers were of no use in steering. Frightened and in agony, the balloon cried out for her beloved brown basket. Like the basket, she realized her fatal mistake too late. The basket had allowed her to soar, but he had also kept her safe. When the balloon bounced off the sun, she exploded into 1,000 shiny brown pieces. What was once a magnificent brown balloon floated down to the jagged white rocks and was consumed by the swirling white waters. Then something happened that had never happened in the history of time. The swirling waters rose until they completely covered the jagged white rocks, and for the first time in 1,000 years, the raging waters were calm and peaceful. Without the basket, the balloon could not steer clear of the dangerous sun. Without the balloon, the basket could not rise above the dangerous white rocks. Together, they made a formidable team. Apart, they were doomed. The end of all stories. The lion cannot survive alone. Without the lioness, he will perish. Umoja. We must forgive each other. The bottom line. Chapter 41. The bottom line. White genetic survival. Black love equals the black male plus the black female plus the black womb equals white genetic extinction. Obviously, the reader is free to accept or reject any of the ideas or theories presented in this book. However, one universal truth is undeniable. Whites are experiencing a global infertility crisis. The evidence. Host John Gibson, during the May 11, 2008 segment of his program, My Word on Fox News' The Big Story, advised his white viewers to do your duty, make more babies. He went on to report that nearly half of all children under the age of 5 in the U.S. are minorities. Russian President Vladimir Putin was so concerned about the declining population of Russia, he paid couples to have babies. Russia will lose close to 45 million, one-third of its population, over the next 50 years, 2008. Global white population to plummet to single digit, black population to double. As a percentage of world inhabitants, the white population will plummet to a single digit, 9.76%, by 2060. The bigger gainer in the population derby will be blacks or sub-Saharan Africans, will expand almost 133% to 2.7 billion by 2060, 25.38% of the world's population. Of the 7 population groups studied, only whites projected to sustain an absolute decline in numbers, 2008 report by the National Policy Institute. By the middle of this century, if the present fertility patterns continue, 60% of the Italian people will have no personal experience of a brother, a sister, an aunt, an uncle, or a cousin. Germany will lose the equivalent of the population of the former East Germany, and Spain's population will decline by almost one quarter. Europe is depopulating itself at a rate unseen since the Black Death of the 14th century, when an entire continent, healthier, wealthier, and more secure than ever before, fails to create the human future in the most elemental sense by creating the next generation, something very serious is afoot. Source: Is Europe Dying? Notes on a Crisis of Civilizational Morale by George Weigel, History News Network, August 5th. The logical conclusion: as long as black fertility is seen as the enemy of white genetic survival, any form of black love between the black male and black female will always be under attack by the white supremacy system. Wombs for rent. Women in Africa and India living in poverty are renting their wombs to wealthy white couples when the white wife has no uterus, an underdeveloped uterus, or medical conditions and is unable to carry a baby to term. The couples provide the sperm and eggs. The eggs are fertilized in a test tube. The embryo is then transferred into the uterus of the surrogate mother. The non-white female, who is often a mother herself, must abandon her own children to live in a surrogacy center until the baby is born, usually under conditions that the non-white females could not afford for their own children. Some object to this practice, labeling it the colonization of the womb by whites. Others justify it. You guys have no idea what it is like to want a child so badly and not be able to have it, wrote one white female in response. The surrogate mothers do it for survival. Vora is one of those women. My husband and I only earn 50 rubles, $1.20 a day. My husband and I want to give our children a future, and this is the only way to do it. The Kress Theory of Color Confrontation. Dr. Francis Kress Welsing, a famous African-American psychiatrist and the author of the ISIS Papers, The Keys to the Colors, 1991, states that white supremacy is practiced by the global white minority on the conscious and unconscious level to ensure their genetic survival by any means necessary. Dr. Welsing contends that because of their numerical inadequacy and color inferiority, white people may have defensively developed an uncontrollable sense of hostility and aggression towards people of color, which has led to confrontations between the races throughout history. Repressing their own feelings of inadequacy, whites set about evolving a social, political, and economic structure to give blacks and other non-whites the appearance of being inferior. Whether the reader accepts or rejects Dr. Welsing's theories, it is undeniable that whites are in the numerical minority on the planet. It is also undeniable that whites are experiencing a fertility crisis and a negative population growth rate. There are more deaths than births. Countries that made the negative population growth list: Ukraine, Hungary, Germany, Russia, Romania, Czech Republic, Slovakia, Italy, Greece, Japan, Poland, Austria, Lithuania, Croatia. Women of color are the most fertile. The fertility rate, the total number of children the average woman is likely to have, ranges from 7 or more children per woman in developing countries in Africa to around 1 child per woman in Eastern Europe. Certainly, the number of white females who choose to abort, remain childless, or have fewer children contributes to the low white birth rate. However, the skyrocketing demand for fertility drugs, fertility clinics, sperm banks, sperm donors, artificial insemination, in vitro fertilization, test tube babies, U.S. and overseas adoption mills tells a different story. The rate of infertility among whites is increasing. Do all races practice skin color supremacy? Mr. Neely Fuller Jr., in his 1969 textbook for Victims of White Supremacy, described racism as a universal operating system of white supremacy rule and domination in which the majority of the world's white people participate. Mr. Fuller suggests that economic forms of government such as capitalism and communism were created to perpetuate white domination and that the white race is really an organization dedicated to maintaining control over the world. In addition, he argued that people of color have never imposed colored supremacy on anyone. Some might argue that Mr. Fuller is incorrect and that white supremacy is simply human nature because it is natural to discriminate against people who look different. They might also add that slavery existed all over the world long before Europeans enslaved Africans 400 years ago. Certainly, it is true that human beings of all races have enslaved other human beings throughout history, but this usually happened after the victors won a war or a conflict. The victors never justified this enslavement with a system of skin color supremacy. If one looks at the overwhelming historical evidence, it appears Mr. Fuller's argument may be correct. Countless battles have been fought between warring tribes throughout human history, but those tribes never justified these wars with a system of skin color supremacy. Nowhere on earth does a system of skin color supremacy exist except among white people, Europeans. If it was normal human nature for all races to kill and oppress other races based on skin color differences alone, there would be a history and evidence of such skin color-based conflicts and systems. For example, brown people would have developed a system of brown skin supremacy. Red people would have developed a system of red skin supremacy. Black people would have developed a system of black skin supremacy. Yellow people would have developed a system of yellow skin supremacy. America, as we know it, would be a very different nation, as would most of the world, because Native Americans, Africans, and the first black Australians would have murdered or enslaved the first European arrivals on site instead of helping them survive in the New World. Black is genetically dominant, white is genetically recessive. Note, the authors do not pretend to have any scientific expertise. As is true in this entire book, the reader is free to accept or reject any theories or explanations presented here. The following is based on our own research and logically drawn conclusions. According to the genetic phase of biology, black is genetically dominant and white is genetically recessive. Ancient Fossil Discoveries in the Late 1970s by Lewis Leakey, a British Kenyan archaeologist and anthropologist, and his expedition concluded that the first man and woman originated in Africa. If Mr. Leakey is correct that all human life began in Africa, it is logical to assume the African man and African woman are genetically capable of making all colors of humanity, which includes black, red, yellow, brown, and white. Genetically and logically speaking, brown is just another shade of black, red is just another shade of black, yellow is just another shade of black, and white is another shade of black. However, politically speaking, white is not a shade of black because white is a non-color. How do we know this is true? White supremacy classifies all non-whites as people of color, which means white cannot be a color. Is there a link between melanin and fertility? If the fertility rate per woman in developing countries in Africa ranges from 7 or more children, and the fertility rate in Europe is 1 child per woman, we might draw some logical but not necessarily scientific conclusions. Africans have more melanin than Europeans because dark skin has more melanin than light skin. Africans have the highest fertility birth rates in the world. Africans are genetically dominant, can produce all the skin colors including black. Therefore, Africans are in the least danger of becoming genetically extinct except by artificial man-made means, genocide. Europeans have less melanin than Africans because light skin has less melanin. Europeans have the lowest fertility birth rate in the world. Europeans are genetically recessive, can only produce one color, which according to white supremacy is a non-color, white. Therefore, Europeans are in the most danger of becoming genetically extinct by natural selection. Therefore, it is logical to assume there might be a connection between skin color, melanin, and fertility. Truth in Cinema. Children of Men, 2006. Plot. A science fiction film set in the year 2027. After 2 decades of global human infertility, in the midst of societal collapse, a miracle occurs. A young woman is pregnant, the first pregnancy on Earth in 18 years. A government agent agrees to transport her to a safe sanctuary where scientists can study the birth of her child and hopefully save humanity from extinction. The pregnant female is a young African woman. Contrary to white supremacy propaganda, dark skin is not a sign of genetic inferiority. In fact, dark usually represents the stronger original version, while light usually but not always represents a weaker, diluted, or artificial version that lacks something that is found in the original. If you want bread with no nutritional value, you ask for white bread. All the good that was in it has been bleached out of it and will constipate you. If you want pure flour, you ask for dark flour, whole wheat flour. If you want pure sugar, you want dark sugar, Malcolm X. If the African man and woman possess the most melanin, it could mean Africans, genetically and biologically speaking, are the most powerful people on the planet and the greatest genetic threat to white survival. This would explain why dark-skinned black males are more likely to be unemployed, arrested, incarcerated, assaulted, or murdered by police than light-skinned and non-black men, and explains why the darkest-skinned black woman is the most degraded and demonized woman on the planet. Are black females the enemies of white genetic survival? Involuntary and coerced sterilization of black females. According to government documents, forced sterilization in the U.S. occurred from 1897 to the early 1980s. For example, the first sterilization law of 1929 in North Carolina targeted the mentally ill, the retarded, and the epileptic to protect impaired, defective people from parenthood. Women were targeted for sterilization for being promiscuous, lazy, unfit, or sexually uncontrollable individuals. Since black women were assumed to be all the above, they made up 64% of all the women who were sterilized by 1964. Charity Hospital in New Orleans, Louisiana became the only hospital to serve poor blacks from the 1960s to the 1980s. Unbeknownst to its poor black patients, this was the site of mass involuntary sterilization programs by the U.S. government. Some black women reported that they were pressured to have a C-section, a cesarean, instead of a vaginal birth, only to later discover they had been butchered by a doctor who tied their tubes without their consent, rendering them infertile. It is logical to assume that the secret sterilizations of black females are still happening today. Black males, enemies or allies of white supremacy. If blacks are genetically the most dominant and whites are genetically the most recessive, blacks have the most genetic potential to make whites genetically extinct. Therefore, it is logical to assume blacks and Africans will be the main targets of global genocide. This black genetic potential has fueled the false belief and fear that the black male who breeds with the white female and produces non-white offspring is the biggest threat to white genetic survival. In reality, it is just the opposite. The majority of these black male-white female relationships will not last, even if they have children together. The children born of black male-white female unions are more likely to be raised by single white mothers, may have a closer, more sympathetic bond with the white side of their family, in particular the white females, likely to be white identified, more likely to breed with whites or other non-whites with white parent, more likely to produce offspring who will merge undetected with the white population. The future generations of these black male white female unions will produce whites who will be more fertile due to the more melanated black male, resulting in an increase in overall white fertility, which will possibly extend the life of white supremacy and black oppression. Therefore, the black male who breeds with the white female represents the single biggest threat to black liberation and are the biggest non-white allies of racism, white supremacy. The basic instinct of every species is genetic survival. What does the smallest microorganism have in common with the most sophisticated human animal? The instinctual drive to reproduce and perpetuate its own species. Therefore, non-whites must ask themselves a critical question. What is the most logical and desperate response of any species that fears extinction and has the sophisticated brain power to address their inadequate numbers? In the 1970s, South Africa developed race-specific bioweapons to target blacks and Asians. In September 2000, the Project for a New American Century published a document in which Dick Cheney described race-specific bioweapons as politically useful tools. Source: Alex Jones's Endgame DVD. It is up to the readers to decide the truth for themselves. A third fear involves a slightly different scenario, a world in which non-white people might someday gain the kind of power over whites that whites have long monopolized. And then what? Many whites fear that the result won't be a system that is more just, but a system in which white people become the minority and could be treated as whites have long treated non-whites. This is perhaps the deepest fear that lives in the heart of whiteness. It is not really a fear of non-white people. It's a fear of depravity that lives in our own hearts. Are non-white people capable of doing to us the barbaric things we have done to them? Robert Jensen, The Fears of White People, White Professor, University of Texas.
Context of White Supremacy. That is the conclusion of audio segment A. There was a slight delay in the live feed and it was coming out of my headphones. Anywho, end of audio segment one. The number to dial if folks have questions, comments, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Two quick things and then I'll get the number. I was speaking with Emmy before this past weekend off the air. And we were talking about the book club, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. And she said, I didn't get to participate in the most recent program. She's been globetrotting and such. And she said that one thing that I do think is important, even though this book I am not pleased with, I find it repugnant. The black misandry is undeniable. That said, and even though Pam and I did have a major argument about this years ago off the air, even with all of that, we still were able to do a number of programs where I think we were able to do some constructive content that hopefully was not filled with anti-black male sentiment, hopefully no anti-black sentiment, period. But I think we were able to do a lot of programs and without name calling and, you know, cursing one another out. Even when we had our disagreement, that wasn't the case. So I do think that there's a lot to be said for that. And even as best you can, when you have disagreements, because that is going to happen. Again, there's no individual in the known universe where I agree with every single viewpoint that they have on white supremacy racism. So you're going to have times where you don't have the same opinion as another victim. Even then, having a code where just because we disagree doesn't mean that now I'm going to call you a lot of names or curse at you or whatever else, just because we disagree. And even though we did, Pam and I have a heated disagreement about this, it was still pretty codified, even though it was off the air. Majorly important. And also think it's equally important. The audio segment that we played where Pam was speaking at the beginning of the program, that was from 2011. Daniel McGuire was the guest on the program that day. Pam said that she had endured a lot of racist comments from white men, making some sort of sexual remark or comments at her when she was a young girl in her teens. That is routine in the system of racism, white supremacy. I don't think that's something that should be minimized. When she talked about that on the program, that sort of trauma is significant and a major aspect of racism, white supremacy for a lot of black children, unfortunately, males and females. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. So questions that I will make sure I get out. Let's see. Definition of love, still searching for that definition of love. In the audio segment that we started with, Pam, she talked about how it's important that we have empathy for black females who are victims of racism. They've been through all this trauma. We should have empathy for it. Empathy for them. Certainly. The way this book is written, does it make you feel empathy for black males? We've almost read the whole book. There are only a few chapters left. I think we've read more than 80% of the book at this point. So we should be thinking of major themes, what we've heard over the past 2 months since we've been reading this book. Based on what we've heard, does this book make you feel empathy towards black males, even the black males that are feverishly chasing white women? Does it make you feel empathy towards them as victims of white supremacy? Questions. We'll see if there are folks who dialed in. If you have commentary you would like to share, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And again, tremendous gratitude for our narrators, Red, Medi, outstanding job getting all of the segments together. Much obliged for all of your hard work over the last 2 months or so, it seems. Thank you kindly for investing in the broadcast. Let's see, folks who dialed in with a hand up. And again, thanks to listeners for being patient. Teacher training is almost done, so we'll be back on the normal schedule, so it will not disrupt the broadcast. We'll be back with all of the normal timed broadcast. Book club will be back in its normal schedule. Thanks everyone for being patient. Almost done, and hopefully the prenatal teacher training will reap dividends for black people. Wow, I think it's super constructive, but that's another conversation. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. If you have commentary, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Retired firefighter. Good to hear from you.
Give me a few minutes. I'm trying to get the vehicle in the garage.
Safety is important when operating those motor vehicles. other folks who dialed in while we allow retired firefighter to do some nifty parking. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon. Good evening. Guys, good evening to all the listeners and callers, Codify software developer. So I just wanted to weigh in on the conversation that's been happening over the past couple of weeks regarding the Black misandry. So I do think that there has been some incredibly imbalanced commentary regarding black males versus black females in this text. And I've had a hard time actually reading the text. I do think there are constructive things in this text, but unfortunately they're overshadowed by the way black males are spoken about in this text. To answer your question, I have not seen a definition of love in this book at all. And I would argue that a definition that I have for love is action. And I don't think that the action of overly criticizing black males while not criticizing black females in the same way, even though we all have the same pathology due to white supremacy, is not an act of love. In regards to the other question about empathy for black males, I'll put it like this. Mr. Fuller, and I'm going to paraphrase Mr. Fuller here. Mr. Fuller talks sometimes about black people being conditioned to look for leaders and look for leadership and not really think critically for themselves. And anybody who picks up this book and it sorts under that conditioning will unfortunately come away from it with thought processes that are not conducive to repairing the relationship between Black females and Black males, especially when the Black male is continuously accused of chasing white women and mistreating Black females, and Black females are seen as sort of these innocent bystanders. And I just, as a personal note, I do know Black people in tragic arrangements, and the bulk of them are Black females with white males. In fact, I know quite a few Black males, and I can only think of two who were in tragic arrangements, and those don't seem to be going as well as they would like. So that's all I have for right now. Thank you for allowing me to share. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, codified software developer. I'm sure the Black males you know are feverish as well. And if Wisconsin didn't lock up so many Black males, they would be with white women too. Other folks that we have not heard from at all, if you have commentary, lines should be open. Proceed. Folks might be hanging out while they get their notes together, what have you. I can share a few thoughts while people are waiting. One thing that I have been chomping at the bit, as I said, for me, this book is repulsive. Like, we're getting very close to, competition for competition with The Hate U Give. Just trying to put this in context so people can understand, like, my level of disgust with this book. Extraordinary inaccuracies. We can put the Black Miss Andrew to the side. The inaccuracies in this text alone are enough for me to say absolutely not. I would not encourage anyone to read this book. Mr. Fuller has never used the term showcase Blacks. This is in the Cow's archive. This came up before. I just didn't know. I was hearing this term being used 2011. I just had forgotten that this term was in the book, and it actually took me a few times of hearing the term showcase Blacks and the venomous way that it was being used, the same way these no good showcase Blacks. You could just replace showcase Black with Coon or Sambo or whatever else, but these showcase Blacks going out here running around for white people. And it stopped, and it was, whoa. The term that Mr. Fuller has in the code book, the term that he has used for decades, is racial showcasing, not showcase Blacks. I called Mr. Fuller and asked him directly in 2011, once my ignorant mind picked up, wait a minute, that's not the term. This sounds like name calling. Mr. Fuller, have you ever used the term showcase Blacks? What did he say? Absolutely not. That sounds too close like name calling to me. What did I say last week? No name calling. And I can even come right back with the Black Miss Andrew, because she said most of the Black apologists, that's another name calling, most of the Black apologists and most of the showcase Blacks are usually Black males. We can put that Black Miss Andrew on the side for a second. I'm just coming back to the inaccuracies. Mr. Fuller talked about that, specifically about people misquoting him or attributing statements that are kind of like something that he said. It's kind of close to what he said, but it's not what he said. And I said last week, what I think is dangerous about this text, reading it now, there's so much nonsense aside from the Black Miss Andrew, there's so much nonsense and inaccuracy in the text, and then slip in a quote from Dr. Welsing every other page, or Mr. Fuller, or even Gus T. and the Cows. It lends a veneer of authenticity, like, oh yeah, this is, you know, yeah, this is great, accurate information. This not at all. It's not even quoting Mr. Fuller accuracy, and think words are important. I say that all the time, and I do not think people grasp that. You have lots of Black people, including Black males, who could stop chasing white women for 5 minutes to try to do something about racism, who died just because of what they said. They didn't pick up a gun. They didn't kill anybody. They weren't talking about killing anything. They were just presenting their views on racism using words, and they were killed. Words are very important. I do not take it lightly or minimize when people misattribute statements to me, misquote, particularly about critical things. All this time that I spend talking about no name calling, if someone had quoted, said, oh yeah, Gus T is always talking about these showcase blacks, do what? He did not say that. If anybody, I am not in error. This is not a miss, because this was another big one I had forgotten about. I just didn't know that Showcase Blacks was in the book. And then the audacity to attribute that to Mr. Fuller. Like, my God. Ooh. Getting close. The Hate U Give. Neck and neck. Worst book ever. I'll stop there. Other folks that we've not heard from. I don't know if people are still parking, getting their notes together, getting a glass of tea.
I'm here.
Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus. I want to make sure that signal is good. Oh, man. I want to say that if a bunch of black men got on this line last week or this week and said, you know, no, this book is not an attack on black men, that will not make them right. If a bunch of black women got on here and said, you know, nah, you know, this is not an attack on black men, that would not make them right. If no one in the universe agreed with you, that wouldn't make them right. And this is not, and I'm going to just say this, this is not a opinion, this is not a view, this is truth claims. Either name calling is an attack on black men, or it's not. Either lies and slander is an attack on them, or it's not. Either lopsided presentations of different scenarios is an attack, or it's not. Either gossip and tacky anecdotes with Dennis Rodman and Slim Thug and Bushwick Bill and whoever else is an attack, or it's not. I think that this book is malicious and calculated in the way that in its presentation and in its attack on black men. I think that the anecdotes are strategic. And I think that it's unfortunate that just like the criminal organization ISIS is connected to Dr. Welsing's work, that if I'm not mistaken, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act is a phrase that Dr. Welsing made up. And it's unfortunate that it is tied to a title of a book that speaks about black men in a way that she never has and never would that I ever heard of. In terms of what I said it last 2 weeks ago, that this book trashes black men and it is a hit piece on them. The constructive value in pointing that out is that that helps to prevent further damage. Last week, I believe it was said in the book that white females hate black men, but they love black cop. That is a degrading comment to black men. And, you know, you want to talk about degradation. Well, us degrading ourselves is not a black man's fault. If we bend over in a video, that's not a black man's fault. If we offer up our bodies for a beer to be placed on our backsides, that's not a black man's fault. If we pose nude or pose naked in a video or half naked in a video or on a magazine or any of those things, that's not a black man's fault. As far as empathy, absolutely no empathy. And the thing that I would wonder with the way that black men are trashed in this book, my thing is, what she done with black men? That to me is a very important question, because it's just this, you know, it's like they're just black men are just white female chasing criminals, rapists who kill each other and who are allies to white females and to white people in general. There's no motivation for black love. I wouldn't want to be with a black man after reading this book. And on top of that, when you talk about this, is the last thing I'm gonna say, we talked about a black woman's perspective. Where is it? I don't see the black woman's perspective. All I'm hearing is a black woman talking about, and I don't mean a black woman, but I'll just put it this way. I hear people talking about black men. Well, where is the woman's perspective to talk about what black women are doing, to talk about how black women are hitting black men, not just black men hitting black women, and how we are degrading ourselves in music videos and everything else? I have so much more to say, but I'll leave it there. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus. I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Ivy. Other folks, if they, again, same thing that I said last week, if there are folks who think this is constructive or this is at, well, it would be with the exception of the Showcase Blacks. Anybody who thinks that is accurate, you're wrong. There's no wiggle room. There's no nothing. You're wrong. So on that one, she is most definitely incorrect. Anybody associated with that is for sure inaccurate. So aside from that one, anybody who says beyond that point, the book is accurate and or there's no black Miss Andrew, that's not the case. I think it's constructive. You should definitely dial in, because moving forward, I'm going to be saying all the folks who say that this book is great, wow, you are letting me know a lot about what you think about black males. Anybody, black male, black female, anyone saying, oh yeah, that's a great book. Black people need to read. You are letting me know a lot about what you think about black males. I cannot believe we were in any way related to black children being given copies of this book. That is, oh, horrendous, like giving them poison. I mean, literally, because it is poison for how you think about black males. It's not even giving out accurate information. And again, feel free to dial in if you have a different perspective based on the evidence in the text. Other folks who dialed in.
Can I be heard?
Retired firefighter. Yes, sir.
Greetings, Gus. Greetings, everyone. It's just one word that keeps reverberating in my mind over this book and articles that are similar. Results, results, results. Results of what? The results of the global system of racism, white supremacy, going through its four stages. I believe there are establishment, expansion, maintenance, and primarily what I'm speaking on is refinement. The racists are coy and very much mindful of the results based on what they do in the most sophisticated scientific manner around the world, and how it affects non-white people, especially non-white black people. And I would say, based on the subject matter that you brought up last week, it's one of the main results, because the races are aware that as long as incorrect or this type of dialogue between non-white black males and females exists, that there can never be any concentration on the global system of racism and supremacy at all. And that's what I think about when I hear some of the clips in this particular book. And based on what I've been hearing, unfortunately, it's not new to what I've heard in conversation and or in behavior. I can recall back years ago, this one incident that I can recall, I have stopped working what they call out in the field, you know, fire station, fire truck, rescue truck going on calls, and accepted a position in training. And what's unique about it, and I'm not going to go into what training is about, other than that becomes now, instead of a 24-hour day, 24-hour workday and 2 days off, it becomes like most people's job hours, which is somewhere around from 9 to 5. And I was in an environment with, with fellow firefighters, male and female, white and non-white black. And I can recall a black female that was made a habit of talking about her personal life and her personal past. And one statement that stuck in my head was that she was forced to, because of a relationship with a black male, run out of his arms into the arms of a white male, quote unquote. And that particular incident and that particular sentence that I recall reminds me of some of the things that I've heard in this book. And that's all I'd say right now. And I'll continue listening. And if something else that comes to my mind, I would also participate in the comment or question. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. I'll give out the number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I also wanted to make sure I got on the record. It is a little bit like being in the Twilight Zone for Gusty. I am using a metaphor. It is a very bizarre situation for me to be reading a book written by someone who just passed away, who was a guest on this program many times, talked on and off the air many, many hours over the years. We're in the introduction, the cow specifically, Gus T, me specifically, in the dedication at the very beginning of the book. I don't know if that was read in the audio, but for people who have the hard copy, we're right there. To be in that position where a book where you get a shout out, where you have to say, wow, I think this book is poison. But that is where we are. Stunning. And again, I had forgotten. I didn't read this book and say, oh, Charlie, this is wonderful. Pam and I had an argument about this off the air. This book, I don't think anyone can say that they've ever heard me say, oh, yeah, this book is in my top 10 for books that I think people should read about racism, white supremacy. Delectable Negro, on the other hand, absolutely. But yeah, I had forgotten. I hadn't looked at the text in so long. To come back and, what a revelation. Wow. And equally, I am surprised. Even the question, what is the constructive value of pointing out that this is anti-black male content? I'm even surprised that I would have to answer such a question. No problem. I'll do it gladly. And I say that again, because when Pam pointed out anti-black female content, which abounds in a system of white supremacy, it wasn't required to explain. Now, why is it important that we point that out? We had to do that for black males. Wow. That alone, one of the most shocking moments that I've had on the cows this calendar year. Like, I drastically underestimated black misandry, even within myself, because the first time Gus read this book, because I read this page to page, it should have been this response, like, wow, if you're coming on the program, this is one of the worst books that I've read. I'd read a few books at that time, not as many as now, but whoo, this should have been the response the first time around. Notes from this section: black apologists, that's name calling, all of that. Victim of white supremacy is what all of these people are. That is the most accurate title for any non-white person, be they black, non-white, non-black, anyone who is not classified as white, whether they are cooperating knowingly, unknowingly, whatever they're doing, the most correct title for that individual is victim of racism. That doesn't mean that we give them a hug and forgive everything that's done, or that we even enjoy this person's company. However, we're not going to name call this person and make up new titles. I've not seen where that solves any problems at all. No name calling. Mr. Fuller does recommend that. No name calling. I also found it illogical, contradictory. Black apologists, it was said in the book, are most likely to be college educated black males. The book has already said that black males less likely to get high quality college education. That's why you have more black females who have better jobs, higher education. The book said that last week. How is it that black apologists are most likely to be college educated black males when black males are least likely to get to college? Anyway, Showcase Blacks, again, name calling, not coined by Neely Fuller Jr. And she says, again, not surprisingly, that Showcase Blacks are usually black males are the ones who get placed on television. When they put two Showcase Blacks together, they get two black males to get on and fight each other and then reward them with a white woman after the show ends. And I keep doing this. I'm going to do this until the program ends because the book, it's ridiculous. I said it's repugnant. Okay. Sexual intercourse, we got it. Sex with whites is a bad thing. Is that the only problem that's happening with black people in the known universe? Is, again, there's a reason we do not talk about Area 8 on the compensatory call-in. That has been a rule for years. There is a reason. Forgive each other. I laughed out loud. I have to snicker every time I say the title of this book, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. Talking about forgiving each other, it was just said in the book last week that a disloyal black man will be shown no mercy. They just said it in the text last week. That's what I mean about the book is also contradictory. Like, you can't be quoting Neely Fuller Jr. in the 10 stops and no name calling, and then you come back and you're calling black males niggers. We don't even have to deal with Showcase Blacks and black apologists. That's name calling too, but I mean niggers, make it plain. You can't be that contradictory. We're going to forgive, but we're not going to show any mercy to these feverish, worthless, disloyal black males. Anyway, black males, allies or victims? What in the world? And where's the chapter black females, victims or allies? Even a question about whether or not we should consider black males as victims of racism. And again, the greatest obstacle to black liberation is the black male who is in bed with a white woman. Are you serious? Anybody on the line? Anybody? If you are listening, you cannot be a spectator. Is there anyone who thinks that is a true statement? That the biggest problem that is in our way right now to replacing white supremacy with justice, black males, sexual intercourse with white women. Is anybody present that thinks that that is a true statement? If we just get rid of that, we'll have this thing licked. Anybody present that thinks that's true?
I had to unmute my line just to say, absolutely not. And that is, that might be the worst statement and disrespectful accusation and cruel statement ever that I've probably ever heard, probably about any black person. I've heard some stuff, but if that's not the worst, that's up there. I'll mute my line.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
The best I can give that. Well, the first, the answer to the question is, say it again. I don't want to get it wrong before I give my answer.
Is it a true
statement? Say it again.
Is it a true statement that the greatest obstacle to black liberation is? Okay.
No. Okay. Yeah. Basically, I think I mentioned it last week, is that, and this has been my personal experiences and observations is that a lot of times when a non-white black person is confused, and all of us are confused to different degrees, the pain level would go to whereas they would have an articulation primarily with against other non-white people. And in this case, and I understand why the people activity number 8 is one that you don't purposely make popular on your program. It's because probably if you'd have been doing that, probably by now you probably wouldn't have a program because it's such a activity to whereas quickly things can go to negative conversation between black males and black females. I mean, very easily. A couple of times through the history, and I think I've tuned into your program through most of those 10 years, if not all of them. And there's a couple of times where it did become very close with problems of that nature. You've mentioned some of them on the program, I think, last week. But and this person is a person just expressing, things that are primarily from an emotional standpoint and not a scientific standpoint. And most times when you do that, you're not going to be correct. You're not going to be correct as far as that concern. As I mentioned before, with the female, non-white black female that I was talking about in training, and she was, consistent at talking about her personal life. She ended up marrying this white male. And on top of it, this person was a race soldier for Miami-Dade Police Department and had at least one child with this white male racist. Matter of fact, but from listening to her, basically I learned a lot about behaviors of white people when they are directly in sexual relationships with non-white people. Cause I would just sit there and listen for the most part. And she did say when they got into arguments, you know what she was called. You know what the name she was called on a consistent basis, as far as they're concerned, so no, the answer would be no. That's, as far as they're concerned. No, that's it.
Much obliged, retired firefighter. And I had been saying, maybe I should say it more. System of white supremacy, where deception is the number one weapon being used to maintain this system. Maybe that, hey, if you want to talk about number one obstacle, deception. Having accurate information about what's happening. Maybe that's number one problem, number one obstacle to black liberation. Strive for accuracy. Retired firefighter, I think, has been pointing out consistently that when we're talking about a system of white supremacy, frequently in this book, they're saying in the United States or in America or some variation of that. And he consistently says, when we're talking about white supremacy racism, we're talking about the known universe. Not one little tiny spot on the map. That's not what we're talking about at all. Let's be accurate when we talk about this. When we expand our thinking just on the continent alone, you have huge numbers of black people growing from what they just said in the report. 25% of the population soon. Huge numbers of black, millions of black people who are not even around a whole lot of white women to be feverishly chasing them. And I think for them, man, they have a list of problems, and shacking up with white women is probably not on their top 10 of problems. I think retired firefighter was talking about the tsunami that happened and the flood that happened, non-white people struggling. I am pretty sure they have a list of problems. And again, black males exclusively shacking up with white women is probably not on their top 20 list of problems. Anybody who thought that that was a truthful statement, make sure that, you know, you go ahead and get a hand up. We cannot have spectators if anybody thinks that that is a truthful statement. The caller at 3098, did you have commentary? Did you think that that was a truthful statement? Last four caller at last four digits, 3098.
Okay, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
All right, good evening. I hope everybody's having a constructive evening. No, I do not believe that is a accurate statement in the least bit. I want to share a couple of notes I had written down real quickly. From the very first paragraph, that anecdote where, like I said, it's just continues the Miss Andrea, like she said, the black man, she's get disgusted with him. And then continuing to mirror what you said about the black apologists, the whole paragraph, the whole two paragraphs is a qualifier, but then now is the focus to the black man, black male. And similarly, the black apologist has a qualifier, but then seems to refer the black male is a closeted homosexual. The balloon in the basket. I'm really starting to get a lot more clarity on why, as attempted counter-racist should avoid metaphors. The parable was uneven. It seemed to me that the cause of the balloon suffering, I guess the black woman, was the basket's pathology for the other than brown balloon and his stifling control. Well, the cause of the black basket suffering was his pathology and his hankering, to use a word, for the non-brown balloons and his yearning to be free of responsibility. And lastly, I think it might have been more constructive for the authors not to include the items regarding black genetic dominant, white and genetic recessive. I believe the authors failed to make a connection between the theory of black genetic dominance and the threat of white genetic extension as presented by Dr. Franz Kress-Welser. And also that caveat note also just indicated to me they had no confidence in what they were presenting. But yeah, that's pretty much as far as this first section. That's all I want to share. Thank you for letting me share.
Just really quick, you said the caveats made you think that they had no confidence in what they were presenting. What do you mean when you say that?
Well, see, when you present information, you're not going to put a note, well, this might not be accurate. So it's my opinion. When you put a note in that, that seems you have no confidence in what you're presenting. You understand what I'm saying? It's like, okay, well, we're going to put this out here, but we're gonna hedge our bets and say, well, you might not agree with it, it might not be accurate, but we're gonna present it anyway. It doesn't seem like it didn't have a lot of confidence in that segment.
I see. I got you. That caveat I think was presented a few times. I was thinking, I think Mr. Fuller and I say that I think on a pretty regular basis that I could be in error. You've heard me say that a few times, right, on the program? Mr.
Yes,
Fuller
yes,
as well.
Yes, that's correct. But yes, but it seems different to me. I don't know why I perceived it as such, but it just seemed like it didn't have a lot of confidence in it.
Okie dokie. Much obliged. Thank you for the elaboration. I appreciated the point about the quote unquote closet homosexual. Perhaps allegation that was slipped in there when they were talking about the black apologists that were typically black males. And to that, the very first section that we started with, the anecdote about the television watching and saying that watching television and seeing a commercial or a TV program with a black male and a white woman, this black female would get so angry that she would go out and see a black male, see a brother. And they wouldn't have to do anything or say anything. And she just disgusted. Like, what? That is insanity. Now, I mean, if that's true, you know, okay, no victim of white supremacy qualifies for mental health. That is insanity. Like, wow, if that is what is happening. In this text, I'm saying it sounds like the authors watch a lot of television. Like, I am not interested in reading a text about racism, white supremacy, where the references are entertainers and the evidence is what is portrayed in a variety of television programs and movies. I mean, that is absurd. That to me does not count as scholarly evidence. I mean, you can include a reference to a film or here or there or what have you to bolster a point. But I mean, it's like consistently just coming back to TV programs, movies, entertainers, social media as the evidence. I mean, I can certainly see if people are saying we're trying to appeal to younger people and this is not a scholarly text. Generally, you do not, when you are talking to about serious matters, it's not just we're just going to go and see what, you know, Matt Damon has to say about this and, you know, whomever else, Kanye West, that'll be our reference point for whatever we're talking about. We're talking about serious matters. Like, come on, that is absolutely repugnant. We're talking about the subject of racism, white supremacy, and I think that could be contributing to some of the pathology, just the anecdote that she said. And I said this to Pam. We talked about this, that interview the first time Renethia Tate was on the program. Pam and I talked about this off the air. And I said, I think it could just be if you watch a lot of television, which unfortunately many victims do, if you watch a lot of television and you just keep seeing that, and you're watching content where that's what you're seeing, black male, white woman, or whatever it is, and you just keep watching that, and you come to think that that is reality. That somehow becomes in your mind like, oh yeah, that's what's happening, and carrying resentment towards black males about this. Like, wow, I could only say turn off the television, because I think that could be happening in this text, even. Watching television and getting a really gross representation for what's happening, and then that just increases the anti-blackness. I'm sure that's probably happening with all of us in a variety of ways, but just, wow, I thought that was the disgust of, with black males is rife throughout the book. Other folks have thoughts. Again, anybody who thought that that was a truthful statement, definitely want to make sure we get your perspective on the line.
May I be here?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
I would say it's impossible for black men having sex with white females being the greatest obstacle to black liberation. Just given the fact that it's not a lot of it going on by the own author's testimony. So for that to be the greatest obstacle, that's just absolutely, that's illogical. And it's impossible. In terms of what the constructive value is, that question being posed to you, Gus, my theory is that the reason that was posed to you is that some people, I think, are assuming that you are attacking Pam by criticizing this book after she has passed, and I think there may be sensitivities to her being. To her having passed, and so the question really might be, what is the constructive value in attacking another victim? Which that is not what you are doing, but I think that that is the perception of some people. I think that's why such, and I don't say this to be mean in any sort of way, but I think that's why such an illogical question was posed to you. It was stated in the book that black men are not prioritizing liberation, and that's the reason that it's that we don't have any liberation. Going back to the same thing about the greatest obstacle to it, the greatest obstacle is white people. It was stated earlier that in the book that last week that white females, they feel oppressed. They don't feel oppressed. This nonsense and these lies about sexism is just a deflection to distract from racism. A statement we made about half-breeds, well, that's name-calling. And going back to what I said about how this book is a malicious and a calculating attack on black men, it's because the authors used, they used just surgical precision with their words. They called black women who were in sexual relationships with white males, called us naive, and called black men ever eager. There was a statement about black women over 40 are approached by white men more than, by white males more than black men. That's a lie. It's also a lie that black men are sexually ravishing white females, and white people don't fear us. That's a lie as well. That's just something they propagate to justify harming us. Also, Omar Thornton did not submit to terrorism. What he did is he complied with terrorists. Nobody submits to terrorism. He was confused, and he didn't have a lot of black people, first of all, to be around in the first place. That, I think, is a reason why black people, period, get into sexual arrangements with white people for the most part. We are using them, and we also, geographical location is an issue. You hear a lot from black men about how the white females were taking care of them, and even the white females say that. I'll say a couple of more things that the white female that Omar Thornton was with, she didn't treat him like the co-workers did. She may have treated him badly, but she didn't treat him like they did. Probably didn't call him a nigger and all these other things. And I think that, you know, where's the evidence of that? Did he shoot her up? No, he shot up to the people who he felt was really mistreating him. And I think this detour about just focusing on him being in that tragic arrangement, I think that was an intentional detour to trash him, that there was no desire to speak of him as a victim. There was no desire to speak about his victimization at the job. There was more desire to speak of him as a perpetrator of tragic arrangements. And two more things real quick. It's a lie that black men are followed in stores more than black women. Black people in general are followed in stores just to harass us. And it's a lie that that white females, that they clench their purse and lock their doors and all this and that when black men are walking by. That may happen once or twice or whatever, but for the most part, that's not happening. For the most part, they are predators, and they are trying to get black men to probably take to water down their genes so that to slow down a lot of the procreation of black children, and also to get them in a Bill Cosby situation. And even last thing I'll say, it was even stated that the white females really chase black men. So how can they be doing that and also they're locking doors? That's a contradiction. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Oh, Bill Cosby. Obligatory mention of Bill Cosby. Mm. Thomas in New
York.
Yes, just give me 1 second, sir. I hear you. Thomas in New York, and then we'll get retired firefighter. Thomas in New York.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Gus. So I think firefighter was, I texted him to say, hey, I've been on the line, but hey, great show. There's black men with white women. One problem we face as black people. Is that the question?
Yes, sir. Is that a true statement?
Ah, man. It does cause confusion. However, I think there's much more problems we have. In fact, if that was the case, then we wouldn't have no more white people after a while. But, you know, even though there would be some confused victims. Pam is a victim. And Pam was obviously very confused when she wrote this book. I would love to know if she took those same positions as she evolved with her understanding of the system. And it was funny because a lot of the situations are the very same positions that black women seem to take on black men just in general. So it's a training, it's done through, of course, white media. I would love to have asked her opinion on Shahrazad Ali, who wrote a book where she was very, she wasn't downgraded black men at all. I would just love to see, because sometimes on women, especially women being classified as black, disagree on a lot. wouldn't compare this to The Hate U Give. However, that was fiction, and that was nigga, bitch, drinking 40 ounces, smoking blunts, hanging out of the projects. You know, it was just all around the tackiness. I think this was a victim's attempt to put out good work, not to trash us, like The Hate U Give was. So I wouldn't compare it to that. However, I do disagree with a lot of what she wrote. In particular, you know, the slave trade and her historical perspective was my line in the sand, you know, and, you know, I would love for white people to provide more evidence on this so that way I wouldn't have these questions. However, you know, I just listened to some, I felt bad, you know, because all my commentary was very negative in the reading when I was, as we were reading these passages, I guess you could say, or I was questioning a lot of what she was saying. So, you know, but I guess I'm not the only person to have a problem with the book. You know, from that, I get a lot of what you're saying. The last thing I wanted to say, Gus, you know, no one can attack black men better than white people. The headlines the other day read, after Kavanaugh, Trump chooses Kanye West over women. No one can attack black men more than white people. I mean, just think of that connotation in the context white people, in particular white women and black women, are going to read that from. And I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Much obliged, Thomas in New York. And I guess to Ivy's point about people perhaps thinking that, you know, this is some sort of personal attack on Pam, if we want to use the word attack. In my view, the attack is this book. That is the attack. I mean, we have got flagrant name calling, inaccuracies, even legitimacy lent to some of the name calling because it's being attributed to Mr. Fuller. I mean, these are, in my view, like major attacks, if you will, consistently degrading, name calling, and disparaging black people. That is an attack by the very definition of the term.
Can I ask you a question, Gus? Is he still there? I think he got dropped.
I'll Facebook him.
Yeah, with that long pause, that's what the problem is. I guess he'll get himself back on the line. Everybody can hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and Mr. Firefighter, I thought it was incredible what you said last week about how Asians, they don't really have a community, because if they did, they wouldn't look like Haiti when natural disaster strikes. I thought that was just incredibly informative.
Yeah. You know, well, the word is a very, very broad term, and it encompasses a lot of people. Most of them are non-white. I would say a lot of them are just as quote unquote melanated as we are. But for the most part, I think a lot of people are kind of like narrowed into thinking when they hear the word Asian, a unmelanated person with small eyes, period. You know, as far as they're concerned. And that's just not even half of the picture. Oh, Gus is back.
Do you want to finish your thought, retired firefighter?
Oh no. When I came and kind of like interrupted you, it was to let you know that Thomas was trying to get back on the line. But I would say also, additionally, is that question that I think you brought up about black males and white females. First of all, I would say, logically speaking, it wouldn't be enough white women anyway.
You know, I mean,
logic
already collectively, sir.
I just said logic.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. They already collectively are a tiny, tiny, small number of people. Now you're talking about cutting that number considerably to quote unquote females. And then we're talking about even more. Well, what about the females who may be physically ineligible to be able to produce children? As far as they're concerned, you know, that's going to cut that number down even more. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, and I would say under the system of race and white supremacy, just like in chess, and I don't know anything about chess, but I have heard the phrase that you always, quote unquote, protect the queen. Am I correct?
The king.
Is that,
king.
That some sort of
protect
lingo in chess?
You protect the king and
the king?
Queen in chess. Yes, the
okay,
king.
Okay, king and queen. Okay. Well, the queen part, it makes relevant to what I'm talking about as far as they're concerned. They have to have a percentage, a important percentage that is well protected, you know, from that standpoint. Just like Thomas said, is that if that was going on, you know, in a short period of time, it wouldn't be no white people around, you know, as far as they're concerned. But, yeah, that was just some of my additional thoughts.
Appreciate that. I may have misspoke, but my understanding of chess is that you are supposed to protect the king. That is it. The queen is the most powerful piece on the board, unless I'm misinformed, but you're always supposed to protect the king. That is the objective, and capturing the opponent's king. That's my understanding. What I was saying when we had the audio interference, and then we had one other caller, and then we'll get to the second audio segment. About the personal attack, because I think Thomas was talking about, you know, feeling some type of way about hearing his commentary where he was not saying that he loved everything and agreed with everything that was in the text. And then to Ivy's point about perhaps some of the listeners thinking that this is a personal attack on Pam. And I said, well, you know, the attack is the text. Name calling black males niggers, in my view, that is an attack. Attributing quotes to Mr. Fuller that seem to lend authenticity to name calling. That is an attack, in my view. Presenting inaccurate information to further disparage black males, to question whether or not black males are even victims of racism. That is an attack. To point out where, well, wait a minute, this is not correct. This is something that is, you know, not accurate. That is in no way a personal attack of Pam, the same way that I do not take it as a personal attack when people call in and say, you know, Gus, what you just said was inaccurate. You know, you said something that was inaccurate, or you wrote something, maybe you misspoke, but it's inaccurate. That's not a personal attack. And if I was on here name calling anybody, calling them niggers, coons, whatever it is, I would hope somebody would say, what you're doing is incorrect. That's not helping us to solve this problem. That's not a personal attack. That's just pointing out what I consider to be incorrect behavior. Certainly that is not what I have advocated as correct counter-racist conduct. I don't view that as a personal attack at all. And I don't think the way that I have articulated my views, even saying that, you know, I had to think about this and give this great consideration because I do have a close relationship with Pam, but that notwithstanding, wow, this is, I even have to do that much explaining. I don't think there's too many folks here who had a closer relationship to Pam than I. I'm in the dedication for this book and the next book and the next book. The caller at 9029, did you have commentary that you wanted to share?
I'm just listening in. Thank you.
Did you think that was an accurate statement that the greatest obstacle to black liberation is black males in sexual arrangements with white women? Is that a truthful statement in your view?
I don't view it as a fully. I do see let's say I don't think it's an accurate statement, but I can understand the perspective in which she's coming from as a black female and seeing black men with white women. It can be hurtful in many black women's eyes, and it could lay the groundwork for text that we just read in that regards. But I do feel that there is some psychological issue there with black men seeing white women as the quote unquote anointed woman to quote unquote have in their life. And I think that programming needs to start from within our households. Like I don't know how else it could be done, because we can't rely on television or any other form of media to teach us anything else. But yeah, I do agree that statement was inaccurate. It's not completely the biggest problem we have.
Much obliged.
I'm sorry. Can I say something real quick, Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
I just want to quickly say that statement in the book, I don't know how to say this right, so I'm going to say it wrong. It acts like black women are not in sexual relationships with white males. And most, if not all, of Pam's sisters were married to white males. So how can you sit here and say this is the greatest obstacle and this, that, and the other, and you're so hurt and X, Y, and Z, as if black women are not doing this as well? I'm mute my line.
Follow the logic. I think I said last week you can take the title of this book, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, since that's like catchphrasy, rhetoric-y in my view. Black Love is a Revolutionary Act. Follow the logic. Or you can take one of Gus's favorites that I've said over the years. If you like the program, so what? If you don't like the program, so what? Replace white supremacy with justice. That's one I've been saying for a long time and will continue to say for counter-racist purposes, just like this. It's not personal. It's business. Audio segment number 2.
The system of white supremacy will never be dismantled by those who created it, who depend upon it, and who benefit from it. No amount of begging, crying, pleading, marching, protesting, threatening, boycotting, tantrum throwing, assimilating, integrating, self-hating, interracial dating, breeding, or marrying will eliminate racism, white supremacy. 13 reasons white supremacy will never end voluntarily. Reason number 1, whiteness is the foundation of white supremacy. White supremacy cannot exist without whiteness. The reason whiteness exists is to practice white supremacy. Racism cannot exist without race. The only reason race exists is to practice racism. As explained in Chapter 19, page 129, there is only one race, the white race. The white race is the only so-called race that is able to practice racism. The only reason racism and white supremacy exist is to mistreat people based on color, who are classified as non-white, and who are falsely identified as the black, brown, red, or yellow races. Therefore, race is a false concept used to justify mistreating people based on color, practicing racism. Some whites are whiter than other whites. Even whites make a distinction between the original settlers, the white Anglo-Saxons, WASP, and the European non-white tribes that immigrated to America during the 1800s. For example, when the Irish immigrated to the U.S., they were not seen as white and were given jobs considered too dangerous for slaves, since blacks were considered valuable property. Noel Ignatieff, in his book How the Irish Became White, explains how the Irish were allowed to become white if they agreed to endorse and practice racism against blacks. The dark-complected Italian immigrants also faced rampant discrimination because of their lower-caste non-white European status. That being said, whiteness is not a fixed identity but can be adjusted on a as-needed basis. This is indisputable proof that whiteness is a man-made concept, a code of behavior, and a political identity that serves the needs of the most powerful and privileged whites. It is also proof that the white supremacy system can guarantee white privileges and benefits for all the people classified as white only at the expense of those who are classified as non-whites. If whiteness is a manufactured identity, then white superiority does not and cannot exist and is based on lies and deception when it comes to white superiority in history, civilizations, inventions, ancient origins, historical artifacts, music, art, science, medicine, cuisine, technology, and literature. Reason number two, to maintain the system of white supremacy, white wealth, and white privilege. When someone benefits from a system, they are understandably reluctant to change that system. For example, coworker A makes 20% more than coworker B, even though their jobs are identical. Eventually, coworker B becomes suspicious and asks coworker A about his salary. Coworker A avoids the question and denies he is treated any differently than any other employee. He also hides the fact that he is related by marriage to the personnel manager. Coworker A knows it is to his advantage to avoid direct answers to coworker B's questions. Otherwise, coworker B might have some action, like filing a lawsuit, that causes coworker A to lose his privileges. Most people, including coworker A, cling to the often false belief that they are honest and ethical people, even when they are benefiting from the mistreatment of others. This belief requires mass deception on the part of those who benefit and mass deception towards those who are being mistreated. In a system of white supremacy, it is necessary to convince non-whites that they are not being mistreated, convince non-whites they are disadvantaged because they are inferior, convince whites they have earned advantages because they are superior, convince whites they are being mistreated by non-whites, convince whites that non-whites deserve to be mistreated, convince whites to keep silent even when racism is happening in front of them. Reason number three, peer pressure. Whites are subject to a great deal of peer pressure to be racist from racist whites, or at the least, to not interfere in the business of those who practice racism. It is extremely rare for any white person to do more than give lip service to eliminate racism because to do so would require him or her to give up the privileges and entitlements reserved for whites. It would also mean facing reprisals and punishments for breaking the white code. Reason number four, false white innocence. In 1992, Jane Elliott, a white former school teacher turned anti-racist activist, appeared on The Oprah Winfrey Show and conducted the following experiment without the knowledge of the studio audience. Before the audience was seated in the studio, they were divided into two groups, the blue-eyed people and the brown-eyed people. The show's producers immediately escorted the brown-eyed people to their seats and offered them donuts and coffee in clear view of the blue-eyed people, who were treated rudely and forced to stand for 2 hours. By the time the blue-eyed audience members were seated in the studio, they were furious. Mrs. Elliott poured gasoline on the fire by saying their unruly behavior was proof that blue-eyed people were less intelligent and more violent than brown-eyed people. Even after Mrs. Elliott revealed that the entire audience had been part of a social experiment on racism, most of the blue-eyed audience members continued to rant and rave about the way they had been treated. Mrs. Elliott calmly reminded them that being mistreated for 2 hours was nothing compared to dealing with racism on a daily basis. White people do not live in the same reality that people of color do, Mrs. Elliott explained. We think that because we have all these freedoms, everybody else has them too. That isn't the way it is. For the first time in their lives, the blue-eyed audience members got a taste of real-life racism and discovered that being mistreated for having the wrong eye or skin color was an infuriating and demoralizing experience. Regardless, most of the whites in the audience fiercely resisted Mrs. Elliott's message because to understand it would mean losing their imaginary white innocence about the cruelty and realities of racism. It is logical to assume the white people who fought Mrs. Elliott's lesson the hardest were most likely the most guilty of practicing racism. Mrs. Elliott's real crime isn't playing a trick on the blue-eyed people in the audience. It was breaking the unofficial, unspoken rule for whites in a white supremacy system. Never ever admit or reveal publicly as a white person that white privilege exists. Reason number 5, guilt, aka the fear of being exposed. When non-whites bring up the subject of racism, many whites feel it is a personal indictment attack against them. Even when non-whites criticize the government, some whites become angry and defensive because they see these white government officials as extensions of themselves. A week after Katrina devastated New Orleans in 2004, John W., a white employee, asked his black coworker, Joe S., if the government was lax in its rescue efforts because most of the people were black. When Joe said absolutely, Tom became defensive. Oh, so now you hate all white people? This illogical, almost hysterical response could mean John secretly agreed with his black coworker, but still felt the need to justify the white government's actions. In addition, many white males identify with the powerful white males who run corporate America and the U.S. government in a desperate attempt to distance themselves from the inferior female and non-white masses. This explains why so many poor and working class white males cling to a Republican Party that has done nothing for poor and working class white males. The blatant racism of Katrina and the fear of guilt by association fueled John's reaction. Otherwise, there would have been no reason for him to take his black coworker Joe's criticism of the government so personally. Non-whites should not take any comfort in white guilt. Guilt is non-productive for the victims of white supremacy because it rarely results in a change in the behavior of those who benefit from injustice. In fact, too much guilt actually has the opposite effect by creating resentment and a tendency to justify one's behavior rather than correct it. Reason number 6, indifference. A white woman who identified herself as a white supremacist was asked the following question by her black interviewer. What do you think white people would do if the U.S. government did to blacks what the German government did to the Jews? Nothing, she said. Don't you think whites would say or do anything about it? No, because it wouldn't be happening to us. While this seems like a chilling response, it is an honest one. This is why it is crucial for non-whites to educate ourselves about the system of white supremacy and to focus on changing our behavior, not wasting energy trying to change the behavior of those who practice and benefit from racism. Reason number 7, the unwillingness to allow the non-white victims to determine the punishment for the crimes of racism. The victimizer should never be allowed to dictate what their punishments or penalties will be. Just like a prosecutor would not ask an armed robber how much prison time, if any, he should serve. Only the victims have the right to determine their damages and what it will cost to make them whole again. When the victimizers are allowed to be their own judge and jury, the outcome is predictable. The victims never get the justice they deserve. Reason number 8, white supremacy is the biggest mental illness and addiction on the planet. Racism, white supremacy is an economic, political, and social system, a behavioral necessity, genetic survival, and a psychological addiction, a mental illness. As long as racism, white supremacy benefits those who practice it, they will continue doing it. The more it is practiced, the more psychologically addictive it becomes. It is important that the victims of racism understand that those who practice racism enjoy practicing racism. If this were not the case, racism, white supremacy would not be the most dominant system on the planet. Reason number 9, non-whites are enablers of white supremacy. For white supremacy to function, the non-white majority on the planet must be convinced that they are so inferior to whites, they deserve to be exploited, mistreated, and murdered. For example, there are 5 people in a room who are over 6 feet tall. A 6th person who is 5 feet tall enters the room and announces that short people are superior to taller people. The shortest person in the room has never met the other 5 people, but is basing her superiority on their physical differences, their height. The only way the shortest person in the room can prove she is superior to the tallest people in the room is to convince them that short is better than tall. However, if the tallest people in the room refuse to accept that definition of superiority, that superiority is non-existent. In other words, for one person to be superior to another person, someone must agree to be inferior. It doesn't matter what the superior person says, does, wears, owns, creates, or is able to do, unless she can convince the other five people in that room to agree to be inferior, she cannot be superior, except in her own mind. Follow the logic. If non-whites did not cooperate with white supremacy, it could not exist. If non-whites did not betray, degrade, or mistreat other non-whites, white supremacy would not exist. If non-whites did not teach their children that white is superior by their words and deeds, white supremacy would not exist. If non-whites did not place whites on a pedestal economically, socially, intellectually, sexually, or romantically, white supremacy would not exist. If non-whites did not believe they were inferior and agreed to be inferior, white supremacy could not exist. Because there is no way 10% of the world's population could physically overpower the other 90% without their cooperation. Reason number 10, to prevent revenge, retribution, and reparations for the crimes committed by whites against non-whites. When one group, the victimizers, commits mass crimes against another group, the victimizers only have three choices. 1. To make amends to the victims' mass reparations, giving up their unearned privileges, and dismantling their system of injustice. 2. To neutralize the victims, keep them in an inferior position. 3. To exterminate the victims outright, genocide. If the victimizers are not willing to make amends, lose their privileges, power, and wealth, and if it is not in their immediate best interest to exterminate their victims, they must find a way to control them. This is the only way to guarantee the victimizer safety, prosperity, and superior position over their victims. The victimizers cannot allow their victims to become whole, to unite with one another, or to gain any knowledge or any advantage that will make them equal to or greater than their victimizers, because the tables might be turned against them. Reason number 11, white genetic survival. One of the greatest dangers the white world faces is our decreasing numbers. If we do not take drastic measures to reduce the non-white populations, we will face certain extinction or enslavement. A quote on the declining white birth rates, name withheld by request. Reason number 12, a lack of shame, contrition. On January 17, 2011, The Oprah Winfrey Show took a 25-year look back on race in the USA. There were numerous scenes where whites apologized to blacks for previous wrongs. The whites in the audience were moved. The blacks were moved. Even Oprah was moved. One older black male guest hoped that by watching the show, more white people would be moved to stand up for what's right. Certainly, some blacks assume these seemingly heartfelt apologies will shame whites into dismantling the system of white supremacy. However, this false belief flies in the face of a 500-year reality. Certainly, whites who practice racism know they are harming non-whites, and whites who remain silent while other whites practice racism know they are benefiting from mistreating non-whites. It is time to get real about our situation and face facts. No amount of TV shows or Oprah feel-good moments will stop those who benefit from white supremacy from practicing it, and shame has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with white genetic survival by any means necessary. There are basically two types of shame. Number one, inward shame, is contrition and often occurs in someone's most private moments when they are sincerely ashamed for something they have thought, said, or done because they knew it was wrong. Real shame does not require an audience and is a highly motivating factor in changing one's behavior or making amends for previous wrongdoings. Number two, outward shame, is the embarrassment at being publicly exposed or caught in the act of doing something other people disapprove of, even if that person does not believe their behavior was incorrect, is not sorry. This type of shame does not change behavior, but actually increases the odds of deception. The person's true motivation is not shame. It is the fear of being exposed, ridiculed, opposed, or punished by their peers or their superiors. Their victim's feelings or pain has no importance to them. Only their own feelings are considered. For example, after Hurricane Katrina and the grossly cruel, inhumane, unjust, and racist treatment of blacks was exposed to the entire world, white America was outwardly ashamed, embarrassed, at being publicly exposed as racist. This led to a very public and very well-advertised outpouring of help from the white collective, even while those same whites were still practicing racism against blacks and other non-whites. However, within days of the storm, black Katrina survivors were once again demonized and blamed by the U.S. government, the white media, and the white collective for being abandoned and grossly mistreated by their own government. Embarrassment and the fear of exposure are the only kinds of shame the racist white male and racist white female are capable of feeling when it comes to mistreating blacks or other non-whites. Reason number 13, white supremacists love their work. The only way white supremacy could have existed for as long as it has existed, over 500 years, is the white people in charge and their white foot soldiers really enjoy their work and have no intention of stopping what they are doing, practicing racism. White genetic survival by any means necessary.
Context of white supremacy. That will wrap up our audio for this week. I'm going to see if we can wrap this book up, thankfully. Next Friday, I'll be done with teacher training this week so we can go back to the normal book club schedule. So this will be next Friday. My math is accurate. That would be October 26th. We do the book club. Hopefully we can wrap it all up. Whew, thank God. Black love is a revolutionary act. Ha, ha, ha. The number is 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'm still thinking on it. I do definitely compare Black Love as a Revolutionary Act and The Hate U Give. Absolutely. I compare them, the main reason, the Black Misandry in both of those books. Two books on the book club this year that we accidentally read that, in my view, both strongly, vehemently promote Black misandry. That, I thought, was the main takeaway from the book. The killing of Khalil, dead black male that we get to talk about, necrophilia, chew on his corpse for the whole text, pretend that we care about him while the main black female character is dating a white man. And her father is totally impotent and not listened to. He's ignored in his whole house the entire way through the book. He's thrown down by the police officers on the ground in front of his children, impotent, worthless, no good, probably ravishing white women in his mind. But the Black misandry in that text and the way that they talked about Dr. Huey P. Newton, remember that? Can't forget, repeatedly disparaged him. The Black misandry in that text, repeated right here. In this text, that's one. And I've been thinking, we're not done yet. We got at least one more session. I hope, man, I'm hoping we can get all this in next Friday. This might be the worst book I've ever read. And the reason being exactly what Thomas in New York said, The Hate U Give, current holder of that title, worst book ever. That book is fiction. Presumably, if you read a book that's nonfiction, there should be a higher standard of presentation. And this fails so miserably on so many levels. Just the inaccuracies, the evidence coming from random unnamed websites and Dennis Rodman quotes. How many times has Oprah Winfrey been referenced in a text? Like, what happened on an Oprah Winfrey? That's why I said this just seems like somebody who watches a lot of television, and that has warped their perceptions of a lot of things. But I mean, a lot of the evidence is just coming. Well, who was on Oprah Winfrey this week? What were they talking about on Oprah Winfrey? Anywho, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. And this has the audacity to have Black Love on the title and a black male in a loving embrace. And then they might as well have had a black male chasing a white woman on the title. Like, that would have been way more appropriate for what you're going to get in this book. Like, it's way more of that. That illustration would have been much more representative for what you're going to get in this text than a black male and a black female hugging. Cause there is, I mean, where has that been talked about or expressed in this book? I haven't heard anything about that, that image that's on the card. That's just some, you know, facade. They should have had a feverish black male dreaming about, running after, hugged up with a white woman. That's what should have been on the cover of the text based on what I've read thus far. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have comments on the second audio segment or or the color illustration, because I think it's totally, I mean, that's not even represented in the book. Where is that at? Am I talking crazy? I think it should have been a feverish black male. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, proceed.
Can I be heard?
I heard both retired firefighter and Thomas in New York.
You first, sir. Did I hear in the last portion of reading something that can be alluded to how that non-white people share, and it almost sounds like equally, into the responsibility of our demise, meaning being victims of racist white supremacy?
That's been stated a few times. I mean, she said that, yes, she said that a few times in this text.
Okay. I thought that's, I can't exactly quote it word for word because I don't have the book in front of me. I've been lately just been listening to the readings. And it kind of like implied that whoever wrote the book said something about how the part that quote unquote that white people play, and then it went to non-white people, and it almost sounded like that we have a quote unquote equal partnership in the global system of racism and white supremacy. And of course, I would say VGQ, but also I would ask whoever would have that type of thought on, could you give me some clarity on that, you know, how that holds to be your analysis? How does that hold to be your analysis? Could you give us some more evidence on that, you know, on that subject? That was just my thoughts when I heard that. Otherwise, you know, the same thing that we've been talking about all the while, you know, with this book still, you know, still is a reality in my view. Results. That's what's still reverberating in my mind. These are expected results that the white supremacists create. And in turn, when they practice racism, white supremacy, they expect certain results. And I would just say that this book is an example of it. And that's all I have to say right now. Go ahead, Mr. Thomas.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Gus. Very interesting. Wow. This chapter, first I want to say the Irish came here on slave ships way before the 1800s, and they got records to prove that. Anyone who couldn't defend themselves back then was a slave, not just us. The blue and brown racism, blue and brown eye racism example, I thought that was a terrible example. I hate the analogy. I hate when black people make this analogy where poor whites vote Republican, but they don't do anything for them. And voting is about getting power, empowered by the people you put in office. 99% of blacks vote Democrat. And we got way, 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 way less power than poor white people. I mean, it's, including Puffy, Jay-Z, Dr. Dre, Bill Cosby, all got less power. I didn't like that example. Whites, non-whites cooperating with black people. I think that it was too broad when she made that analogy. Most non-whites are being forced to cooperate with white people against their will due to white people's military superiority. It's not that they're just working with them because they want to. You know, they know there's consequences and repercussions if they don't. I think her criticism of the Oprah show where the white people were moved and apologizing to blacks and blacks were crying and soaking up all the white validation, another terrible example, simply because she critiqued it. But, I mean, she could have spent the whole chapter critiquing how deceptive and confusing that whole show was. I remember that show. And terrible. I mean, I think that if you're going to use that example, you should really go in on it. And I know she, you know, from listening to her over the show over the years, she definitely understood exactly how inappropriate that whole thing was and how confusing that is to black people. But it was just, you know, like a one-liner. I mean, I think that she really should have, if she was going to use that example, tear that one apart. I know metaphors, but it's not Saturday. And I'll mute myself, let the next person in.
Compensatory call-in coming back this weekend. Bill Cosby mentioned again. That's my Bill Cosby. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Can I be heard? Go ahead, Codify Software Development.
Thank you, Ivy. Just really quickly, I just wanted to clarify something that I said earlier. I just wanted to make sure that that it did not sound like I was saying that that black males are feverishly chasing white females. I thought I may have given that impression. That's not what I was saying at all. Was that what everybody heard? That I was not agreeing with that?
Oh, that's what I heard, that you were not agreeing with that. That's what I heard.
Oh, okay. I got confused by your statement afterwards. Okay. That's all I just want to listen to the commentary now. I'll mute my line.
Ivy, did you want to proceed?
You said amigos?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah, as far as the Codify software developer, she even said, I think she said in her experience, what she's observed is a lot of more black women that are with white males. And I really appreciated that. As far as ending white supremacy, I think it's very logical for white people to end white supremacy. The reason they won't is because they're savages. The reason I say that it's logical is because this is a system that's based on just killing a bunch of people, starving a bunch of people, torturing a bunch of people. I mean, as far as the black misandry, I noticed it very, very early. Even in the rape scene, when they were talking about how the black men and the black women, they were blaming each other. The black men and the black women were blaming each other. When the black man was blaming the woman, it was presented as just savagery on his part, and that it was so unreasonable. Whereas when the woman was blaming him, the things that she was stating, it was presented as though it was logical. Like one statement was that, you know, you're supposed to be the protector, and then one of the authors was like, yeah, I mean, but you know, they are the protector. So it was presented as though it was reasonable for her to blame him for the rape, but it was not reasonable for him to blame her, even though the book was claiming that it was incorrect for both of them to be blaming each other. As far as Omar Thornton again, a statement was made probably last week about how black men, they'll be in these tragic arrangements and they won't mention the abuse and they won't speak up about racism being practiced against them. That's a lie. And also, Omar Thardin was not complaining about racism, that he, it's not a complaint. It was a report of, you know, mistreatment. And he wasn't just, you know, throwing a tantrum. He was reporting incorrect behavior, and he wasn't separating himself from black women. That's mostly who he was around, was white people. And they didn't mistreat him for dating her. They mistreated him because they're racist. That's just, you know, what they are. And I think Laura said black people say nigger, not black men. But she said, because Laura, Dr. Laura, when the black woman called in about her white male husband mistreating her, she said, all I hear is nigger, nigger, nigger. Dr. Laura said that. I don't think she said black men say that. I think she said black people. So to just kind of single out black men for that is just not cool. It was a statement that black men can't think for themselves. That's a lie. They can. And then there was this emphasis on black men saying, you know, race don't matter. Well, black women say the same thing. There's no evidence that black men blame black women for unemployment. That was just a statement that was put out there, but there's no evidence of that. It says that it was stated that black women are programmed about, I guess, to be in tragic arrangements. Well, but that wasn't, but that was not presented for black men. That option was not presented for them, that they're not programmed. They're just perpetrators. Also, we want to talk about all this stuff that black men do about not being on their children's birth certificates and this and that. As I said before, black women are just as responsible for that. And we don't talk about how black women use their children as weapons against black men. Last couple of things I'll say is that, it was presented that black women are victims because we were told that if we're going to get welfare, we have to kick our men out. Okay, well, if you want to present that scenario the same way that you presented the things that black men do, what you would have said is black women could have found a way to take care of their children instead of kicking their men out. They could have got two jobs. They could have done whatever instead of just presenting them as just victims. You could have presented them as, you know, they could have found a way instead of just accepting welfare. But that's not what the authors wanted to do. The authors wanted to present black women as victims, which we are, but that was not granted to black men. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Ivy, codified software developer. Other folks who dialed in with commentary, if we've missed you, line should be open. Proceed. Did we nab everybody, at least for right now? I will assume so. I'll get to a few of my notes. Noelle Ignatieff, Jane Elliott have both been guests on The Cows. Jane Elliott repeatedly. Jane Elliott, incidentally, is an admitted racist. I wish that had been included. That above, you know, all the rest of, you know, that whatever. Admitted racist Jane Elliott. Admitted racist, not anti-racist activist and all this and how many times she was on Oprah Winfrey. Admitted racist who makes thousands of dollars to go around the world, including Oprah Winfrey's show, and carry out this charade. Admitted racist. That would have, in my view, been way more constructive to get that in. Anywho, again, that word privilege and, you know, that is a major part of counter, as I've been saying consistently, words are important. It's not white privilege. Whites do not have privileges. They have power. And the word fair was used. And when she began talking about Jane Elliott, she said that whites live in a different reality. That is not true. I don't even know what that means. It sounds like it's suggesting that they are somehow unaware of racism, white supremacy, that they're not paying attention to it, that they're in another dimension. That is astronomically false. In fact, that's one, that is the exact reason Jane Elliott was supposed to be a guest on the program, I think, a fourth or fifth time. And she backed out, as a racist would do. She backed out at the last minute without, she said it was because of the description. We had talked off the air, and she said that white people are stupid. And she kept saying it, white people are stupid, white people are stupid, white people are ignorant about racism. And I said, pause, I do not agree. And she kept presenting that with such authority as though we both agreed. And I said, I do not agree with that. Like, that would be something to discuss, because I do not think that that is accurate at all. And she said, oh, okay. And we continued about something else. And I put it in the description. She said, oh, no, I'm not going to talk with you at all. And I said, right, that has stood out for years. I've said that. That is not an accurate statement. It's not even accurate to say that whites want to have some veneer of innocence and all that about white guilt. Whites are not guilty about racism at all. Again, I just go to the racist jokes. They just had that report. Racist jokes about black people, males and females, as often as the Lakers. The Economist is searched. LeBron James. Let me find one about what to do with niggers. Five niggers on a light bulb. Got to be a good one. Great punchline there. That's what whites are sitting around doing. They're not guilty about that. They love mistreating niggers. It is joy. It is nirvana to abuse, rape, pillage niggers. That just in any time we have ventured into the area of suggesting that whites are naive, ignorant, unaware, uninformed of racism, we have ventured way in. And again, that's where I come back to worst book ever. This is supposed to be nonfiction, higher standards, and some sort of guilt. Like, oh man, that was a major problem in the first one. In fact, they had a whole big story about a white man. I think it was a constructive worker. The first book, Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation. They had a whole big story about a white man. He was a construction worker. This is one of the little fables that they have in the book, like lots of the ones that trash black males in this one. But this white guy was on a job and they'd stolen his black co-worker's wallet. And the white guy knew that these other white people did it, but he didn't report it. And he felt really bad about it. He felt so guilty that he had a stomachache and he couldn't sleep, and it just really messed with him and it caused this black guy a whole lot of problems. And the white guy, he didn't report it, but he just felt so terrible about it. He ended up getting an ulcer, and oh, poor guy, poor Bill. Like, and in fact, she used a quote from Jane Elliott. She had a quote in the first book. It said, Jane Elliott was saying something about it takes courage, or you have to be brave. She had just said that in the section, that you have to be brave to be a white person like Jane Elliott to work against racism. It takes a lot to stand up. This guy didn't say anything, and because it's hard, you know, it's hard for them to do that. And I was just, I told her directly, this is in the archives, that I do not think that is accurate at all. We had Jane Elliott admitted racist on the program, and she herself said it does not take courage or bravery for a white person to do any of these things. She said that on the program, and to Pam's credit, she edited the first book and took that portion out of the text. And this is in the archives of the cows. But we're walking real close to that in what somebody heard in the portion of the text this week. I'll stop there. Any other folks that have commentary that they want to share on what we heard, second audio segment, or any portion of the book? Again, we're getting close to the end. Going to see if we can wrap things up next week. Concluding thoughts from the text. If we have any folks who read this initially, didn't see any of these concerns, the black misandry or the inaccuracies, and now reading it again and hearing some of these concerns, having any second thoughts? We have any folks who are reading this where you've read it more than once?
I don't recall reading the book. And if I did open it up, I may have only read the very beginnings of it and never got back to it. But very quickly, through the, I would say something like the first part of the book, I was interpreting the articulation in the way that you brought it out in a question about, you know, a lot of negativity towards black males, but I just didn't say anything. I just didn't say anything openly about it until you asked the question, because I kept seeing this pattern over and over, you know, through some of the explanations of for instance, like why the system of racist white supremacy continues. And in most cases in this book, black males will come up as the reason why, and then with the whole idea with calling black males niggas, you know, that you know, that kind of like did it. But I just want to say also with Jane Elliott, makes me sick because she spills out some truths about racist white supremacy, much like Tim Wise does. And then on top of it, it's brash and discourteous about it to non-white victims of racist white supremacy. That obvious that one of our byproducts in this equation of racist white supremacy, the victims are not experts on the subject. And she is so brash and discourteous and loud, you know, about it. You know, it's one of my main observations of this white woman, and it gives you a very refined means of how white people can practice racism, because you know whatever she's doing around white people, it may aggravate a few of them. To a standpoint, you know, aggravate a few of them, and they may mention it in commentary, but I mean, it doesn't do anything at all. It's just a whole bunch of rhetoric that she's doing, and in turn, she's making money off of it. And that's what I've always thought about her. Thank you.
Retired firefighter. Any other folks have comments? Questions that they wanted to submit.
Can I be heard?
Codified software developer.
Yes, sir. Thank you. So I have not read this book before. I have the book, and I have actually all four of the books. And my mother has been reading these books, and she is actually considering giving or buying five copies of this particular book to give as gifts, which I am very concerned about. That being said, and I don't think she's picked up on any of the black misandry. I think she just has a different view of it. So that's that. That being said, I wanted to piggyback off of something that Ivy had said a few weeks ago about, you know, the accusation that black males were feverishly chasing white females, and in actuality, generally, it's usually the other way around. And I myself have seen that sort of behavior where white females would continuously, for lack of a better term, sexually terrorize black males into having sexual intercourse with them. It's been my observation that most black males, even black males who are in tragic arrangements at the time, generally are not with them because they find white females the most attractive. And I had a problem with this book on several different levels. I just want to say a couple of things about this. One, they mentioned that black people have been conditioned to see white people as the most beautiful, most successful, most sexiest, whatever, people on the planet, and then to demonize or criticize black people for being attracted to people that they've been conditioned to see as the most attractive is just ludicrous. It's just incomprehensible. It's incredibly incorrect. Number two, there was some discussion about, so-called black communities and how we do not have businesses of our own and how we allow non-white, non-black people to come in and open these businesses. Well, black people aren't allowing anything to happen. We don't control anything. We don't control the liquor licenses and whatever else licenses that they're giving to the people that are moving into these areas and opening these businesses. And in fact, I've known people who have attempted to get to open businesses. Black people have attempted to open black business or open businesses in areas that are predominantly populated by black people, only to be told that there was that there were too many of those businesses there, and then the next thing you know, there's another non-white, non-black person opening a business there. So clearly, it's by design, and we have no control over that. And to criticize black people who have very few resources and, you know, are going to these stores where these stores have, where these stores allow you to get $2 worth of chicken and a dollar bag of potatoes, and that's what you need to get because that's all you have to feed your family, is also incredibly incorrect. And I have more to say, but I can't think about it right now. I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I did want to make sure that I mentioned it again just because Ivy mentioned it from that opening scene with the rape where the white guy comes in and all of that, that vignette about that being a part of the after trauma that the black male couldn't protect. And I said last week, some of this just comes down to an accurate understanding of white supremacy racism and understanding that in a system of white supremacy, no individual who is a subject can quote unquote protect themselves or anybody else. That is the equivalent of being in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany. They got the door to the gas oven open. We're in the same caged facility. And I look at you and say, oh, looks like they're turning the oven on. Can you protect me? You are, both of us are about to go in there. Same situation if we were in greater confinement. You got your number stenciled on your prison issues. I got my number. Bill Cosby. Me looking at Bill Cosby. Cos, can you protect me? I know you got a few coins left over. Can you protect me tonight? I wouldn't even be here if I could protect myself. That right there, not understanding, and I said it last week, I say it again, it's important because when you have these false expectations, it just sets you up to gripe and complain and fuss and be frustrated. That's all that's going to happen. If you are waiting for black males to protect you, you will be perpetually disappointed as long as the system of white supremacy exists. Either that's true or it's not. If you can even follow the logic as to how a black male, given what you see every day, if you can even follow that logic as to how a black male is supposed to successfully protect anybody in a system of white supremacy, make sure you dial in and let me know. But just having correct expectations, in my view, can reduce a lot of frustrations. Anybody else have comments?
Not here.
Yes, ma'am.
A lot to say on this book. Zane Elliott, the race soldier, she's practicing racism in terms of saying that that white people are ignorant. She did a little presentation saying she asked the white people in the crowd, how many of y'all stand up if you want to be treated like black people are treated? Nobody stood up. She said, oh, that's because you know exactly what's going on. Just like you said, most showcase black people, so-called, are not men. She said 50-plus percent of non-white children, it's 50-plus percent of the children that are born now or something are non-white children. Well, that's not a minority. She called them a minority. White people don't have an uncontrolled hostility. They're just savages. There's no evidence that black men are allies to white females or white people, and that the same thing about how, you know, you'll be white identified and you'll have sex with whites if you're, you know, born if one of your parents is white. There's no evidence that that same dynamic does not apply if the father or if the mother is black as well. Racism is not a necessity in terms of, you know, they're just savages, and they could, like you said one time, Gus, they could find another way to help their genetic survival situation. They don't have to do this terrorism that they're doing. They've shown that they are very brilliant. The anecdote about the person who was mad at the person who admitted that they were slow to help us in Katrina because most of us were black, that person was mad because they're racist. And of course, just like it was said later on, they don't have no guilt. They fear being known and found out, you know, that they're racist. And in turn, we didn't agree to be inferior and cooperate with them, racism wouldn't exist. No, we're not agreeing and cooperating with anything. We're confused. You can't cooperate if you're confused, if you don't have clarity of mind. Last couple things I'll say, there was speculation. Someone in the book, there was an anecdote about someone who asked a question about being in a slave situation, like a mock slave situation with a white person, and then the speculation was that this was not a hypothetical question, that this really happened, and you don't know if that really happened. That to me, just speculating like that was just a way to trash the black man. And men are not the first and foremost important role model in children's lives. Women, we spend most of the time with them, so actually we are. Also, the last thing I'll say is there was this emphasis on white men being homosexuals and somehow white females are a victim of that. Well, no. Most 83% of female homosexuals are white. 80% of male homosexuals are white. So most homosexuals are white females. I'm in my line. Thanks, guys. Thanks, everyone.
Ivy's commentary. Did any other folks have question, comment they wanted to share before we?
Hey, Gus.
Thomas in New York.
The next book. Well, first I want to say, would you? It's probably a stupid question. If this book was more equitable, if it laid it out 50-50 and spoke just as negatively about some of the things of black women, would you still put this in your bottom list? Or I just want to know, is it exclusively just the fact that it's so one-sided, or is it just the commentary in general?
It's the commentary in general. The only thing that would change if it was equal, where it had a section where it was calling black females niggers and saying that they deserve no mercy and they're, you know, feverishly, rabidly chasing white men or whatever, you know, the comparable would be. It wouldn't be any better. It would still be, you know, worst all time worthy. It would just then just be anti-blackness in general, not black misandry. This is a very specific type of anti-blackness, black misandry exclusively. From what I've seen, I just don't see all of the name calling and degrading depictions and blaming and even questioning whether or not black females are victims. I mean, all of that is done explicitly with black males. So and like I said, I've said consistently, we could move the black misandry to the side. The inaccuracies alone, the misattribution, that alone, you know, would be pretty low in terms of my, you know, processing, analyzing of a text and its constructive value. But the black misandry, like, wow, that just, wow.
Now, you said the next book we're going to do from Pam is on which one, Gus?
I cannot read any more of this. I know that the same content is in the Beauty Con game because she was not even going to include black males in that text. I said something about that. Like, are you telling me that black males don't have any problems with regards to colorism? That's what you're saying? And, you know, she included a little bit, so I know it's there. The interracial con game, I cannot. We just basically listened to a whole book about black males feverishly chasing white women. I cannot sit through another book that's going to be all about sexual intercourse. And I suspect the black misandry would be there too. The only book we could read is Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation. And as I said, that's already a book that I identified on the air as being not accurate to the point that she had to go back and edit it. And I said, if we're reading a book that I said 7 years ago I thought was not accurate to the point that I couldn't endorse it, and she had to edit the text, I mean, wow, why even go read a book that I... Now, I've already said that this book is not accurate and not good. Let's see how bad it is. And let's look for the Black misandry. There might be some value in that, but I mean, wow, like that is... I need to cleanse my palate. I need to cleanse my palate. And in fact, I think we should read Tommy Curry's The Man Knot, because I mean, Jesus Christ, the Black misandry. I grossly underestimated the intensity of Black misandry, and I was thinking that would cleanse my palate and maybe help explain why I think this is such an enormous problem and such an enormously dangerous, poisonous, toxic work.
Yeah, I asked, because I was going to infer that maybe we should read someone else's book next, because out of respect for him, you know, because I would assume that all her works were very similar, and especially since I thought it was the Beauty Con game, and I said, I bet you that would sound a lot like this. You know, this is what Black men want, and that's why Black women are doing it, that type of thing. Well, I will say, you know, no one's an expert on white supremacy because we still have the problems. The closest thing to an expert on white supremacy that I've ever seen is Dr. Welzin. You know, I think that if anything that should ever be done, her book should be changed, the title, from theory to the truth, because it's truth. It's been proven. And that's all I wanted to say, Gus.
The grandsister, Dr. Francis Cress Welzin, who would certainly concur, no name calling. I heard Dr. Welzin talk about sexual intercourse many, many times, and I never heard her talk about any non-white person, Black male, Black female, anybody, talk about them in a way that was not with extraordinary patience, empathy. This is a victim. This is a victim. The white woman is the one doing the choosing. She is practicing racism, maximum act of racist aggression, when she presented and talked about this issue. Every single time, I never heard her discuss this topic on this broadcast or anywhere else where she was disparaging or ridiculing any non-white person for being engaged in a tragic arrangement. Even at the Welzin Center, she would have folks appear in that manner there as well. And she had the same patience and kind of grandmotherly touch with them as well. Any other folks?
Right quick, Gus. Thomas, I thought that was a good question. I think that we're almost competing, meaning non-white Black males and females are competing with one another with the negativity. And it's a problem because primarily instead of us putting our focus on the people who have the power and orchestrate the system of racist white supremacy, which is white people, we focus on each other because that's obviously is the easier behavior to enact on, and it's basically it's assisting in that way, assisting the system of racist white supremacy. And under these warlike conditions, being that the system of racism, white supremacy is war, we cannot expect that that Black males and Black females are going to operate on a maximum level. But we can decide on certain things that we are not going to do as far as negative towards one another. We can do that. Under these warlike conditions, I think, and in turn, individually, through codified behavior, actually wage effectively against the system of racist white supremacy. whether it's black males with other black males, black females with other black females, with in the company of other non-white people, period, that sort of thing. It could be done. And on the last but not least, on the other scale, we have this romanticized, and that's what this book is also mainly about, this romanticized ideas, whereas we can have this ultimate relationship and at the same time be under the system of racist white supremacy, which is not very logical at all. And so that's basically my thoughts and understandings to these readings. That's it.
Follow the logic. Just say it again. Follow the logic. And a reminder, Mr. Fuller, in the word guide, in addition to when you look, you will never find the term showcase blacks. When you check out Mr. Fuller's work, producejustice.com, he says that he equates love with justice. It's not possible to have love in a system of white supremacy. That's why I say I keep going back to having correct expectations about, you know, what exactly is possible within a system of white supremacy. Correct expectations, I think, goes a long way to being able to solve problems and to be able to reduce some of our daily frustrations, disappointments, anxieties, particularly with other black people, when we have accurate, correct expectations. Very, very important. And he said, you're just not going to get, should be flagrantly obvious by now, we're just not going to get these relationships where we would like them to be while we're under these conditions. And he said, it should be, that should be motivation to get this problem solved. If we really, really want that so-called black love, let's get cracking to put racists out of business. We'll wrap up there. We will hopefully also wrap up this cotton picking book next Friday. Book club back to the normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And hopefully I'll have my prenatal yoga certification in hand. 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward to continuing and concluding the discussion. You can write in your comments untiljustice@gmail.com. We'll share if folks wrote in and all that good stuff next Friday. Thanks again to our narrators. Phenomenal job getting all of this work done. With that, thanks to everyone for sharing a bit of your Monday evening. Hope it's been a constructive investment of your time and energy. The prenatal yoga training will conclude Friday. So I think we should be back for the compensatory call in this coming Saturday. And yeah, we'll be back. Normal schedule, workplace racism, all that will be back on board starting this weekend. We'll get back to our normal broadcast schedule. Wow, I'll be able to report about prenatal yoga teacher training as well. What an experience. That's it. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Racists do a lot to abuse and terrorize us. Let's do everything we can to keep our brain computers functioning at an optimal efficiency, not disrupting them with any of white's poisons, toxins. Dr. Welsing would certainly co-sign on that one. Certainly, if we're going to be out and about in a vehicle, let's be sober and buckled up every time, driver or passenger. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. No name calling. No matter how feverish the black male is, no name calling. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed. I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim. Man,
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.